don't think I'm doing anything to the microphone, so we just keep going. Well done. Now, this meeting is being streamed live, and the video and audio recording will be made available on our council's website by close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will be made available on our website as soon as practicable. Could we please all check that our mobile phones are turned to off or silent for the duration of this meeting? That would be much appreciated. The agenda this evening comprises 8 reports from management. We do have an apology from Councillor Lelou, otherwise we are all present and accounted for. I'm advising members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision based on fewer than 6 members voting in favour of it, that that decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. It is time, councillors, to note that there may be conflicts of interest for an item to be considered this evening. If you have either a general or material conflict of interest as defined in the Local Government Act 2020, please note the type and nature of that interest at the time the relevant item is being considered. Thank you. We're up to confirmation of minutes of previous meeting, and I'm calling on a councillor to move a resolution adopting minutes of open meeting number 10 that was held on Tuesday, the 4th of May, 2021. It's a bit harder this way, isn't it? But that's good. Councillor Campbell moving the motion. Councillor Hakim seconding the motion. I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we can declare that motion carried, and we're off and away, which is terrific. Councillors, are there any items arising from those minutes that you'd like to consider at this time? None? Thank you. Now, the following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council's governance rules. Bear with me as I go through our submitters and the items of correspondence received. Am I doing something wrong? It was the bend. Sensitive councillors. Thank you, Emerson. So the following submissions have been received. In relation to agenda item 6.1, Ministerial Planning Referral, TPMR-2019-34, which is 572 to 574 Lonsdale Street. It's 256 to 260 King Street, and it's 248 to 250 King Street, and it incorporates Gough Alley, Melbourne. We've had requests to speak from Tristan Davies, Melbourne Heritage Action. Terrible time to get a scratchy throat. Thank you, everyone. Daniel Sisson, who's from Tract Consultants. Simon Hussiger from Cox Architecture. Simon Stockfield from Charter Hall. And Michael Aguru, I always get that wrong, Michael. Sorry, from Hickory Group. Items of correspondence from Daniel Sisson and Tristan Davies. In relation to agenda item 6.2, Ministerial Planning Referral ID-2020-3, which is 1 and 3 Southgate Avenue, and it's 16 to 60 City Road, Southbank. We've had a request to speak from Mem Aziz, Damien Gardner from Clayton Utz, Rowan Neville from ARA Group, Brendan Rogers from Urbis, and Nikki Drobus from Fender Katsalides Architects. Items of correspondence from John Smith, Mem Aziz, Lino Scudone, Peter Silcock and Damien Gardner. In relation to agenda item 6.3, which is planning permit application TP-2020-427, Yarra River, adjacent to Lower Promenade South Bank, which is north of 4 Riverside Quay. We have a request to speak from Paul Waterson, the Australian Venue Co., and items of correspondence from 18 people received in relation to this matter. In relation to agenda item 6.4, planning scheme amendment C387, Hoddle Grid Heritage, permanent controls, we have a request to speak from Mark McMahon, and items of correspondence from Charles Sowerine, Royal Historical Society of Victoria, Felicity Watson, National Trust of Australia, Luke D from Hall and Wilcox Lawyers, Lucy Eastow from Best Hooper Lawyers, Tristan Davies from Melbourne Heritage Action. In relation to agenda item 6.5, planning scheme amendment C380, zoning corrections of public open space and anomalies in the Melbourne planning scheme, we have a request to speak from Chris Thrum, and it's just lovely to see Chris Thrum here with us tonight, one of our most regular participators in our meetings, and an item of correspondence from Ewan Ogilvie, the Carlton Residents Association, Inc. In relation to agenda item 6.7, draft economic development strategy for public consultation, with items of correspondence from Judy Anderson at Startup Victoria and Tim Brasher at Yarra River Business Association. In relation to agenda item 6.8, which is the Exhibition Street Stage 2 Bike Lane and Streetscape Upgrade, items of correspondence from Ben Rossiter, Victoria Walks Inc., and Alexander Shenko. I'm advising submitters that you'll be invited to address the committee at the time that the relevant item is being considered. You will have 3 minutes to address the committee. It is the intention of the committee to adhere to the 3-minute time limit, given the number of speakers this evening. To assist you, we have the counter clock on the wall. For those of you here in person, we have the counter clock. There's a device on the screen if you are coming to us virtually. A bell will ring at the end of 2 minutes to let you know that you have 1 minute left. If you could please finish when you hear the buzzer at the 3 minutes, that would be most appreciated. In accordance with the Council's governance rules, a 15-minute period is allowed at the beginning and at the end of each Future Melbourne Committee for the public to ask questions. To enable the public to participate during this time of COVID, the public can either submit a written question or they can register to ask a question via audio link or now in person. I'm advising the committee that as at 10 a.m. today, we had one public question that is to be asked in person. And we're doing this for the first time in our new premises here, Chris, so it's appropriate that it is you asking the question. If you could come to the podium on this side, it would be terrific, and you know, but I'll say it anyway, that questions are to be no longer than 90 seconds in duration and to be a question rather than a submission. Chris Thrum, over to you.
Thank you. Check 1-2, Emerson. Check 1-2. Great to be here. Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, councillors, officers of the City of Melbourne, management team, and general public too. Just to clarify, I've got a few questions. Is that okay?
Ask away and let's see how we go for time.
Well, we'll have plenty of time for that. First question is in regards to the Reconciliation Action Plan of the City of Melbourne. I remember in your about the first 10 or dozen days of your being a Lord Mayor, you stepped up and you attended the long walk for at Federation Square, and you gave a magnificent speech, one of your first speeches as the Lord Mayor. The long walk this year will be on the 5th of June 2021, but preceding the game against Richmond versus Essendon. I'm wondering, will you be in attendance at the long walk? And we'll be making another speech.
Chris, the city is working with the organisers of the long walk to facilitate all of the logistics necessary to support a lot of people being involved in that event on the 5th of June. And yes, I am attending, and yes, I am speaking. I think I'm one of a cast of thousands, but I'm really looking forward to being part of it on behalf of the City of Melbourne. And I'm sure lots of other people will be attending too.
Excellent. Second question, I'll precede the question by acknowledging and thanking the City of Melbourne, you yourself, Lord Mayor and councillors, the tremendous work that was done by the City of Melbourne in regards to assisting the hospitality industry in the dire need when, like, the sharks are just all over the shop and it's just all hitting the fan in regards to COVID-19. The hospitality industry is in desperate need of more workers. They're short-staffed all over the place. Now, what they require is they require more workers from overseas. They require more technically skilled sous chefs and chefs as well to sustain the hospitality industry in Melbourne and in Victoria. And I know that the hospitality industry is like requesting like federal government assistance in regards to like exemptions and special sort of assistance to get sort of like technically sophisticated people to Melbourne to assist the hospitality industry. And my question is, would you be able to advocate to the federal government and to the state government that the appropriateness for fast-tracking skilled hospitality workers and sous chefs and chefs back into the Melbourne hospitality sector?
Chris, we've certainly passed a motion recently in relation to advocating for the return of international students, and we've been very involved via Councillor Griffiths in discussions with stakeholders in the industry and to state government. Is that my time up? but noted. And certainly we've been part of the group that's formed the consortium that the state government has put in terms of the plan to federal government for the return of international students in a safe but as quickly as possible. In relation to skilled workers, we've certainly heard the feedback from our hospitality sector, and we see it every day. Many of our venues aren't open in the morning because they just don't have staff to be able to work, and that's really adding to that sense of the city being quieter than normal, and we're keen to see a return. I don't think at this point we've contemplated anything about 457 visa returns, but it's an interesting idea and I think we'll take that on notice.
Yeah, it's sort of like one of those one percenters that it already helps in the crunch. The final question I've got at the moment, again, I'd like to thank the City of Melbourne for all the tremendous work and effort that they did to assist the Australian music industry in their time of need and help. And my question is, Melbourne Music Week was very successful through the duration of its time and even was like sort of interrupted. And Melbourne Music Week extended too was a tremendous idea that was like so brilliant in assisting the Australian music industry and the Melbourne music industry. My question is it the ambition of the City of Melbourne to have Melbourne Music Week extended occur in 2021? Like have the core Melbourne Music Week, but then have the extra special supercalifragilistic expialidocious Melbourne Music Week extended as well?
Chris, thank you for noting the work that we've done with some of the most impacted people as a result of the pandemic. And you're a muso and you're an appreciator of our industry as well. So I know you've got firsthand experience of that. We're still in planning phase around the Melbourne Music Week. But certainly the intention is, and you'll see that in a number of strategies, including the economic development strategy draft that's being considered tonight, that events play a major role in what we do to attract people to the city and to support people in the industry, whether it's music or events or arts, culture, etc. So we'll take your enthusiasm and support for an extended music week back into planning, and I'm looking at Katrina, but certainly also the Melbourne City Revitalisation Fund, which is a joint fund with state government. One of those main purposes is to be able to turbo boost our premier events, Melbourne Music Week being one of them, into these supercalifragilisticexpialidocious type of event that you are referring to. So stay tuned, and we look forward to being able to release more details about that event a little bit later in the year when the planning is finalised. And just to say to our events team that delivering those events in still what is an environment which is impacted by the pandemic, where we still have to work within COVID-safe frameworks, working closely with the state government is challenging, but the team continue to do a great job to deliver everything that's possible and really push out those boundaries. So we're expecting more of the same this year, Chris.
Again, thanks very much. Cheers.
Thanks so much. Well, that brings an end to our question time, public question time at the start of the meeting. And I'm now delighted to call on our Deputy Lord Mayor, Nicholas Rees, who is the chair of our city planning portfolio, to take over chairing of this part of the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. There are five reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio this evening. Can I just check that my microphone is working? I'm feeling like I'm sitting up very high in my chair tonight. Maybe we can work on that for next time, but please bear with us with the if there's any teething issues. Can I also say how wonderful it is to be in a Town Hall Commons? May this be a meeting place for Melburnians for many, many years to come. And local government is the level of government that is closest to people. And boy, do we feel that sometimes when we're considering planning items here at Town Hall. The first agenda item is 6.1, Ministerial Planning Referral TPMR-29-34 for the property 572 to 574 Lonsdale Street, 256 to 260 King Street, 248 to 250 King Street and Gough Alley, Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation in relation to this item? I think we're probably okay on this one. So I will now call on Tristan Davies from Melbourne Heritage Action, who requested the opportunity to address the committee via Zoom in relation to this matter, to speak for no more than 3 minutes, and there'll be a 1 minute reminder bell at the when there's 1 minute to go. Welcome, Tristan, via Zoom.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors. I'm on?
Yeah. You are indeed.
Cool. Still a bit weird doing these Zoom meetings, but get through it. Well, I just wanted to, firstly just talk pretty quickly on this item. Firstly, just wanted to sort of applaud council on getting an additional retention on the significant heritage building, the Kilkenny Inn, up from what was a previous almost facadism to what basically retains at least a room of this old pub, although potentially not enough of it in our perspective, but still like a great improvement. And it's great to see that the new heritage guidelines are really being brought to the forefront in terms of planning matters like this. I did just want to register some concerns we still have, though, of course, with this development, which I would hope the council may or may not share with the minister when it goes to him. Most significantly, of course, it still involves, I would say fairly needlessly, the demolition of Paramount House, which, as you might know, in agenda item 6.4 is one of the first significant buildings that are listed in that agenda item that's going to go towards the panel. Although it doesn't have an interim heritage overlay, it is recommended for protection in the Hoddle Grid Heritage Review, both because of its architecture and also because of its significant history in Melbourne's film and silent movie era history. So I think it's important to, still sort of advocate for a building like this to at least be retained in some form when it's very easy to do in a large office development. We also have some concerns still with the treatment of different laneways in this development, particularly the fact that we're going to be losing yet another bluestone laneway completely, not just the street pattern itself, but also obviously the historic bluestones, which have been a significant issue in the past and are things that the City of Melbourne has said they want to protect better. So again, we'd like to see some form of change in this development, which, retains more of that bluestone heritage in this development. It's also worth noting that at the rear, with the rear laneway, you're also seeing a significant change in the typology of that laneway. It's one of the rare sort of hooked laneways in Melbourne. I suppose you could call it an L shape with like little entrances into it, which is just going to be sort of flattened out and turned into a big boring pedestrian straight line. Again, I think that's a bit of a shame when a much more interesting planning decision could have been made with that characteristic laneway, which adds a bit of, diversity to Melbourne city streets. So that's all really. I would just like to also, acknowledge it's a bit of a shame to see one more pub in Melbourne CBD permanently disappear after quite a number have gone in recent years to developments. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Tristan. I now call on Daniel Susan from Tract Consultants to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to the Town Hall Commons, Daniel.
Thank you very much. Thank you, dear Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillors. Thank you very much for the opportunity to address the committee tonight. And it is wonderful being in this, back at Town Hall in person and in this amazing new space. The project team have four submitters this evening. I'll be speaking on behalf of the team at Tract as the town planners and landscape architects for the project. And you'll then hear from Simon Hausegger of Cox Architecture, who will speak to the design. And finally, you'll hear from Simon Stockfeld of Charter Hall and Michael Agrew of Hickory regarding their vision for the project, project readiness, and the importance of this project for the precinct and for the construction industry more generally. The proposal before you tonight represents the culmination of 2 years of design and development, which started with a pre-application meeting with the City of Melbourne and the Department back in December of 2018, the lodgement of the application in December of 2019, and a collaborative and iterative design and review process over the last year and a half. On behalf of our client and the entire project team, we wish to thank the City of Melbourne offices, in particular the Planning and Urban Design departments, for their comprehensive and diligent assessment of the proposal as set out in the FMC papers and the delegate report. In our view, these documents provide an excellent summary of the projects its compliance with the relevant provisions of the Melbourne Planning Scheme, and the manner in which the design can evolve over time through feedback and review. We'd respectfully submit that the proposal before you tonight represents a significant redevelopment opportunity for an important and prominent corner site within the city. And in the shortest of summaries, we note the project will deliver a high-quality, architecturally designed and energy-efficient building providing for a significant quantum of A-grade commercial office space which complies with the relevant controls and policies of the planning scheme, and a new through-block link through the extension of Manton Lane connecting Little Lonsdale Street through to Lonsdale Street, increasing both site permeability and in a manner consistent with both proposed Amendment C308 and the current pedestrian strategy. Thank you for your consideration.
Thanks, Daniel. I've got a question for you, but it may be that your clients or one of the other submitters wishes to speak to, and it just actually picks up the point made by Tristan Davies around the Bluestone Gough Alley and also Manton Lane and the red brick wall that runs along that lane. And one of the suggestions in that submission was that perhaps the bluestone and the red bricks could in some way be repurposed as part of the development. That doesn't seem to me to be too onerous a suggestion and something which might actually enhance the character of the development. So I'd invite either you to speak to that or one of the other submitters this evening.
I'm going to throw my support behind that generally, Mr. Chairman. But I'll let Mr. Hausegger, who's the architect, probably speak to the practicalities of it. But what we are retaining in terms of Gough Alley is there is still an entrance point at Gough Alley that maintains the proportions, the dimensions and the size of that space. So there is an opportunity to maintain the bluestone in that location potentially or take it down and put it back in, or alternatively to take that and put it through into the Manton Lane extension in some way. And I'll let Mr. Hausegger come up next. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for Daniel? Councillor Ball, I think.
Did that cover the red brick as well?
I'll let Mr. Hausegger speak to that.
All right. If there are no further questions, thank you very much, Daniel. And I now call on Simon Hausegger from Cox Architecture to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall Commons.
Thank you. I think I have a presentation coming up on the screen. Thank you very much, Lord Mayor and councillors, for the opportunity to speak this evening. Simon Hausegger, Cox Architecture. Next slide, please. For us, this is really an exercise in revitalisation of a corner of the city that we feel has been unloved for some time. And you can see our subject site sitting there the Kilkenny Inn, which has been pointed out before, in all of its purple light glory sitting there in the street, next to the new Central Equity building on the right-hand side, so corner of King Street and Lonsdale Street. Next slide. The revitalisation of this part of the city has been occurring for some time. So 560 Lonsdale Street sitting to the east of our site along Lonsdale, and the recently approved 600 Lonsdale Street sitting on the opposing corner, which was approved, I think, 3 or 4 months ago now. Our site sitting in the middle with Kilkenny Inn on the corner. Next slide. And how our proposal starts to contribute to that landscape. And you can see there the datums of the Kilkenny Inn are taken across the site into our heavier built form along the east of the site, and then that's more recessive expression of the built form sitting above and behind the Kilkenny Inn. Our urban design moves really formed around this new urban link that continues Manton Lane, and I think taking on board some of the comments before around the extension of Manton Lane and potential adaptive reuse of materials are some things that we can consider as we move forward. But we see that as a really exciting urban link that connects Lonsdale and Little Lonsdale Street. And you can see there in cross-section on the left, Lonsdale Street, a double height volume and arcade that goes for a short period, and then we get into the smaller, more compressed area along Manton Lane towards the north. Next slide. The expression of the form at human level, you can see the link on the right-hand side of the screen there, skylit back to Manton Lane. The datums picked up and the materiality, high-quality use of brickwork that was mentioned before, and a more recessive and lighter tones, the materiality and mass along the western side of our site. Next slide. How that starts to sit on the corner. And the next slide, and the bird's eye view, really to see how we're anchoring the building inside the urban grid. And that's it for us.
Thank you very much, Simon. Any questions for Simon? Okay, thank you for addressing us this evening.
Thank you.
According to my notes, it now says I now call on Simon Stockfield from Charter Hall and Michael Grew from Hickory. Are you going to present together or separately?
We're going to present together, but within the 3 minutes, if that's okay.
Sure. You're both very welcome.
Good evening, councillors. My name's Simon Stockfield. I'm Regional Development Director at Charter Hall.
And Michael, just step around so we can see him as well. Excellent, thank you. We can start the clock again.
I'm really proud to be able to talk to council this evening on our joint venture development proposal at 580 Lonsdale Street. As council will be aware, at Charter Hall, we are very passionate about creating great future-ready workplaces for our tenant customers and improving the City of Melbourne through urban regeneration and placemaking. This corner location provides a great opportunity for all of these outcomes. Together with our joint venture partners, we have worked extensively with council officers and DWELP to create a new landmark office building for this important city corner, whilst retaining and restoring the heritage-listed Kilkenny Inn. As projects like this come to life, they will provide an important street-level activation and a change of use to this part of King Street. We are really pleased to be able to contribute to the progressive rejuvenation of King Street. This project talks to the strong belief we have in the future of office and the important part that office workers play in the fabric of this great city. At Charter Hall, we have an enviable track record of going from DA approval to live projects, and we intend for that to be the case for this location. This project has been a great collaboration with the Hickory Group, and I'm really pleased to be standing here this evening with Michael Agru from Hickory.
Thanks, Simon. Good evening, Mayor and councillors. And thank you for your time tonight. The last 18 months have been quite difficult for the construction sector, as you're all aware. And we at Hickory, we had a lot of projects cancelled. In fact, our workforce had to retract quite a bit. This project is really significant for us as a business. It's going to employ probably up to or over 1,000 people throughout its life cycle. So it means real jobs for real people, people that are currently at home. And I've got to say, I left the office today and the phone at reception was ringing nonstop with people looking for jobs at the moment in the construction sector. The commercial industry is quite has been traumatised by COVID. It's an exciting project and we're really excited to be partnering Charter Hall. Charter Hall are one of the few groups in the country that have the means and the foresight to conduct a project of this scale and get on with it during during this type of market. So it's a real opportunity to revitalise the city and particularly this corner. So we'd be pleased if it gets up. So thank you for your time.
Thanks very much, Simon and Michael, before you go. And thanks for the presentation. Very much appreciated. Interested just to know your thoughts on the repurposing of the Bluestone on Gough Alley and the repurposing of the red brick along Mantuan Lane. Is that something you think you could consider as part of the development?
Of course. I wouldn't imagine that being a problem at all. In fact, it's probably in keeping with the design, actually. So.
Terrific. Any questions for Michael? Yep, please.
Could I just clarify? I think the idea of the submission is that the Bluestone is retained rather than repurposed, but the brick recycled and reused. Just to clarify that distinction, is that what you have in mind that you could do?
I believe we're retaining the Bluestone along Manton Lane. Is that right?
And the question is around Gough Alley, correct? Yeah, so the consolidation of the Gough Alley within the site.
So it wouldn't be viable to keep the Bluestone in Gough Alley, if that's the question, but I think it would be appropriate to repurpose that Bluestone within the project, absolutely.
So don't worry, we're not sitting here contemplating putting this in as a condition. So I can, Daniel, you can calm down in the back row there. But, I mean, the suggestion before that you're going to maintain the space where Gough Alley was to the extent that Bluestone could be incorporated there to remind people of the history of where the laneway was and on the other side where the red brick was. As I said, we're not going to condition it, but I think you're hearing a strong sentiment that that would be something that would add real character to what is a really exceptional development.
It seems appropriate, yeah.
All right. If there aren't any further questions, you can resume your seats. Thanks very much. And I am very happy to move a motion which is now appearing on the screen. I'm looking for a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. And I will now speak to this item. FMC is considering a ministerial planning application seeking approval for part demolition and construction of buildings and works for the purpose of a multi-storey building. The site is located on the, in a very important corner of our city at the intersection of King Street and Lonsdale Street. For many years, I'd say that was known as an intersection of sleaze here in Melbourne. But in the last couple of years, we've seen some, I think, really exciting applications coming forward. And I think over the next couple of years, probably led by this landmark development, dare I say, we're going to see a real transformation of this intersection and I think this whole precinct in this part of the city, and that's a fantastic thing for Melbourne. So I congratulate the applicants and Cox Architects, who I think have done a really good job. I also want to single out the officers here. This has been a two-year process, as we heard from Daniel, and it has been an iterative one. And in the officers' report there, you can see some of the early designs. And I think through that cooperative, iterative process, we've got to a really exemplary design outcome, which is very respectful of the Kilkenny Inn, with a very significant setback, allowing it to be appreciated in three dimensions. Which is very much the direction that the city is trying to go in terms of retaining our heritage buildings. I want to congratulate you for that. I also note that there were photographs of the interior of the Kilkenny Inn included in the officer's report. Daniel, you're putting your hand up for those photos, okay? I, of course, have never seen the interior of the Kilkenny Inn, so I was pleased for the first time to see those photos. In terms of the heritage, I think we've got to a very good compromise outcome here. In fact, better than a compromise, I think the retention of the Kilkenny Inn, including those interior rooms, is a really outstanding outcome. And the design interface between the 20-storey tower and the original inn has been really cleverly done. So I absolutely commend you for that. In terms of compliant with the built form outcomes required under DDO 10, I think the proposal responds very well. It's high quality, it's well articulated, and responds well to the site's context. The height of the building does go over 18:1, but the uplift is easily achieved through the office components of the development. I'm also very pleased to be able to say that the proposal is consistent with key aspects of Planning Scheme Amendment C308, which is under serious entertainment by government, insofar as that the car parking is located underground, providing multiple pedestrian entry points across the site. Well done on that, particularly the link through to Lonsdale Street. The use of high quality and tactile materials, including the repurposing of bluestone and brick, as we've heard this evening, the fine grain design on the lower levels. So this is a building and a development that's really going to work at the eye level for pedestrians and users, and it very much engaging of pedestrians with active use at the ground level. So delighted to be able to say that it complies with the city's aspirations around C308. Just taking those all into account, very, very pleased to be supporting the motion. Councillor Lippitt.
Thank you, Chair. I'm very happy to support the motion as well, and commend the applicant on a very high quality proposal, and thank you for coming in and speaking to it. I concur with the Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor. It's exciting to be back here doing these meetings in person. This is, as I said, a high-quality proposal, and I want to acknowledge that the Kilkenny Inn, which is a significant heritage building, now has a much more significant setback and is treated as with a lot more dignity than perhaps the first iteration of the plans that we saw when they were advertised. And I think that the plans that we're looking at now and that are being conditioned now, although ultimately the Minister will make that decision, of course, are testament to the rigour and the quality of the process that the applicant has undertaken, but also to the Minister's offices and our offices for going through that process and seeing where those quality issues could be debated more and where the heritage host could be respected a little bit more. And I do think that even as Melbourne Heritage Action submission acknowledges that the Kilkenny Inn as a heritage host building is treated with a fair bit more respect than it otherwise would have. And I really commend the applicant for that. It's also been acknowledged that Paramount House will be lost, and that later on today the Hoddle Grid Heritage Review will be considered, and in that agenda item will be a proposal for permanent heritage controls for Paramount House. Council has already considered this. This is just the next stage in the planning scheme amendment process. I just want to get it on the record, of course, that it is not the City of Melbourne's policy that that building should not have had interim heritage protection. That was the policy of the planning minister. We may have been in a different situation today had that building had an interim heritage overlay for local heritage protection. It doesn't, and therefore it shouldn't have be treated as though it should be retained under the Melbourne planning scheme. I'm disappointed about that. However, we have to acknowledge that the application has been assessed under the planning scheme as it stands, faithfully in a high quality process, as I've said, and it will result if the minister issues a permit in a high quality outcome. And so, with the misgivings of myself and the heritage community aside, for all the obvious reasons, I do think nevertheless that a permit should issue.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Are there any other councillors who wish to speak for or against the motion? Okay, in that case, I'll put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. I declare that carried unanimously. The next agenda item before us, agenda item 6.2, is Ministerial Planning Referral ID 2020-3, 1 and 3 Southgate Avenue, and 16-60 City Road, Southbank. I think we are going to request that Larry Parsons, the Head of Statutory Planning here at the City of Melbourne, make a brief presentation to us on this item.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. First slide, please. This is a large site, something like 1,950 square metres, which includes the Langham Hotel within that land, the rest being mostly owned by ARA, the developer. It includes two existing towers, the IBM and the Herald Weekly Times. Next slide, please. This is the ground level. The grey is the retained, which is, of course, the Langham Hotel and the bottom of the IBM and Herald and Weekly Times towers. The yellow are the new works at ground level, and you will see going from east to west through the site, the Southgate Avenue retained, although the traffic conditions may vary. The mezzanine floor, the yellow is within, totally within the site boundaries. Moving up, next slide. We are now at about 7 metres above promenade level. The green is the proposed 2,000 square metre publicly accessible open space. This will remain in private ownership, but there will be a design process led by the City of Melbourne with the applicant and with consultation to determine the design of that landscape space. And there will be legal agreements to govern the use of that open space, public access most of the time, and maintenance to council standards by the applicant with access points, etc., also stipulated. Next slide. We're moving up. You will see the yellow of the tower is decreasing. There are some stepped podium levels. Next slide. And the next one. This is now the tower. The lower podium, the step goes up to 22 metres. Above that we have the tower. If you keep going, next slide. You'll see there is a green area, which is an indent, which is described in the conditions to make sure that there's a visual distinction between that mass presenting to the river. You will also see a generous setback to the river, 50 metres to the water, an average of 35 metres to the edge of the site along the promenade, a minimum of 32 metres. 20 metres at least to Key West, to the east, or the right-hand side of the slide, 11 to 12 metres to the hotel, to the left-hand side of the site. Next, please. We move up, we lose a part of that tower. And next. You can see the total height of the podium. It's the 7 metres, the lower part with the open space on top, then the step back to 22 metres and the overall office tower at the back to 26 storeys or 107 metres to the parapet. Next. This is just the side view, so to speak, and you'll see that it's slightly lower than the existing Herald and Weekly Times tower. This is the maximum envelope that can be built. It does not mean that it will necessarily be exactly like that. Next, and here's that envelope in three dimensions with Key West to the left and to the right, the Langham, and beyond that, further to the right, is the Esso site recently approved. And next. This is probably a critical slide where you can see the pedestrian movement. The red stars are the vertical circulations down to the promenade, down and improved to City Road to the south or the bottom. And the arrow beside Hamer Hall indicates a development contribution to that new link back to the arts precinct. There is also a development contribution with the pink hatched areas, both to the northwest, at the end of Southgate Avenue, and to that connection to Hamer Hall, which is obviously at the level which connects with St Kilda Road, and the green, naturally the public space. Next. And this is just an impression of what the building might look like. It is an incorporated document with a building envelope. The plans will have to come back for the detailed design and be endorsed in the future. Next. And an aerial view of what that space might look like. It is not a design. As I said, that will be agreed with the City of Melbourne through an iterative process. And that's the end.
Thanks very much, Larry. I might ask a question first and then seek other questions from other councillors. Could you just go back, I think it's about three, back one more to that slide there. So I mean, just looking at the built form and the mass and bulk of this, it does look like a very large floor plate and a very large building, Larry. This has obviously been done through an amendment through to an incorporated document by the minister, but I guess I ask you the question, how does the mass and bulk of that building align with existing built form controls in South Bank?
Mm-hmm. There's the existing controls along the promenade at the front are 24 metres high, so this is well above that, but well set back. You will see the office floor plate is large, as office floor plates tend to be. You'll see the SO1 to the left is of a large size as well. There are specific recommendations to the minister in terms of facade strategy about dividing that volume, particularly towards the river, and that is both as a facade strategy and as a condition in how the plans should be amended.
All right, thanks, Larry. Councillor Leppett.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, Larry. I know we're about to hear from Mr. Gardner, I believe. I just want to, and so there might be further questions. I just want to ask about the obligations on the City of Melbourne when providing the advice to the Minister on considering the South Bank Project Act. Is that entirely a matter for the Minister, or are we obliged when providing advice under the Planning Environment Act to also consider the matters that we've referred to a legal question that is yet to be answered? Thank you.
Our advice is that the responsible authority, the minister, is the ultimate responsible person for that understanding and decision on the Southgate Act. There has been legal advice sought at DELP, we understand. We have not been party to that legal advice, which is normal in those circumstances.
Thank you. And my last question, just following on from that, if there were material changes to the proposal caused by whatever the upshot of that advice might be, not suggesting there would be, I don't want to give anyone too much hope, would that be referred back to us potentially? Is that up to the minister to decide whether or not we'd get another bite of the cherry?
It's up to the minister to decide on that.
Sorry, I'm going to have a second bite at the cherry, if that's okay. So just reading through the submissions, the written submissions, one of the points that was raised was that a belief that there had been a lack of consultation around this development. So I was just wondering if you could outline for us from a City of Melbourne perspective, mm-hmm. What community information processes and consultation potentially has occurred.
As the minister is the responsible authority, it is DELP who would have to undertake any consultation. It is, as an incorporated document, exempt from the needs for third-party review. We have received some objections. We have noted and considered those in our assessment, and we have also passed them on to the minister so that DELP is aware of all of these objections. Some of them were copied to us and to the minister, but we have made sure they were passed on as well. And we've informed the people on our list of tonight's FMC committee.
All right. Thank you for that, Larry. Any other questions for Larry Parsons? Okay, in that case, thank you, Larry, for addressing us this evening. I now call on Mem Aziz to request the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall Commons, Mem.
Good evening. Sorry, I'm a little bit nervous, so excuse me there.
Please don't be.
Lord Mayor and committee. On behalf of all the people and myself and my partner, I have a couple of questions and some major concerns with this development. I live less than 10 metres away from this development. I've been in the area for 20 years. I've known the area to be an arts precinct, and this is what it's always has been. And in some of the shots we saw there, we couldn't even see the arts centre. It also had been overshadowed with all these developments. Just to go into the questions, what is the City of Melbourne to ensure the safety and health of the people of Key West residents and protecting them? As you know, this construction site is, we do have quite a number of elderly people living in our building as well. So the concerns are not just myself, it's also the entire community. How are we going to be compensated? Because at the moment, from the from what feedback we're getting, it's that the development will go ahead regardless what we want and we don't want. And that's the scary part about it too. We did have consultations between our owners with the residents of Key West, and we had a meeting of over 60 of our owners attend that meeting. We invited ARA to come along and communicate with us, which was totally ignored, and didn't bring any presence themselves, and have failed to communicate with us or to show any sort of consideration to our interests in this development. We've also had support from the media. Southgate News published front page articles on us on two occasions. I believe one of the neighbours, Lino, from La Camira also hit the front page as well with his concerns. And again, we haven't seen any acknowledgement from ARA in support of this. There's quite a number of issues that I want to also point out. Noise and dust coming from the building and the development of the building. And the windows, I'm going to basically, being 10 metres away, have to have my windows closed. My partner, her privacy in your home is a sacred place. And if you can't walk away around freely without other people looking directly into your home, it's no longer sacred. Then we've got the noise and sunlight and the reflections that are coming off the building.
I will ask, you can finish your point, yeah. Mem, but please conclude.
Yeah, so we've got the glare also coming off the building and the mirror images. We saw the overshadowing on that. The heat, the smells, the noise, this will all have a major contribution. On a further personal note, being an arts precinct and tourism for Melbourne, Victoria, it's a major attraction area. If we're looking to develop, more commercial sites for offices and so on, why don't we send them to Docklands to do that? Let's encourage more rather than, again, destroy what we have here as an art precinct.
All right. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you for your time.
Submitting to us this evening. I might respond to one or two of the points that you've made now, but some of them I can address to other submitters this evening. Certainly in terms of safety of people, Mem, there will be a construction management plan which is submitted to the city and approved before the development will go ahead, and a building planning permit will be issued as well. And I can assure you that here in Melbourne, safety is non-negotiable, I think the city achieves exceptionally high safety standards. But you can be assured that there will be very rigorous review around the construction and building of this development. And safety of people is absolutely paramount. In regard to your point about whether the application will go ahead, regardless of whether you want it or not, the nature of the planning system in this particular application is that the minister is looking to make an amendment to an incorporated document, so it's not going through the normal planning processes. The City of Melbourne's here this evening considering what our submission will be to the minister as part of his consideration of this. And so, there's not the usual opportunities, I guess, for interested parties to have input. So I think I'll leave it there in terms of responding to some of your points. I'll pick others up later on. All right, I'll now call on Rowan Neville from the ARA group to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome, Rowan.
I think we have a presentation, a couple of slides available. If we could just go to the next slide, please. I first wanted to thank the Lord Mayor, the Deputy Mayor, and the rest of the councillors, as well as the council officers, to take the time to hear this proposal today and to consider the application to rejuvenate what is a Melbourne icon. ARA Australia became the custodian of this landmark asset in 2018, one of rich history and importance to South Bank as a whole, but also to Melbourne, the Melbourne City. Our proposal looks to address a number of key opportunities and constraints about this precinct with the current improvements of the asset, in particular to address the issues regarding how it was designed and developed back in the early 1990s and how the precinct has changed with the rapid development of residential occurring around the asset. Also to address some of the key amenity requirements and connections of the broader precinct. In this regard, our vision is to really reclaim, for Southgate to really reclaim its rightful place as an iconic Melbourne landmark and tourist attraction. It really is the postcard view of Melbourne. To also create a city-shaping development with added permeability and to the neighbouring arts precinct and cultural institutions, while improving connectivity to the broader South Bank area and beyond. To create an elevated 2,000 square metre park connected to the Arts Precinct and South Bank Boulevard, to undertake greater partnership with the City of Melbourne, providing programmable north-facing river front space for the South Bank Boulevard and also connecting and integrating into the proposed South Bank Boulevard works. We really want this precinct to be loved locally but admired globally. In forming this proposal, we have undertaken some key stakeholder reviews and engagements. We've been including our on-site workers, a number of our neighbours, and the broader resident community. We are confident that this proposed development will benefit these stakeholder groups and everyone who visits this precinct. Further to that, we have done a significant amount of collaboration with the City of Melbourne offices and DELP in relation to this proposal. We do expect further engagements to be ongoing, given its significance, and we will be looking forward to carrying out those should this application be successful. If I go over to the next slide, please. Just some final comments just in relation to this project. There is some fantastic economic benefits in relation to undertaking the development. In particular, we believe the creation of 340 jobs directly through the construction period, a total GVA contribution of over $400 million into the state, into the City of Melbourne, and also the capacity of 3,600 workers on site post-completion. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Rowan. I need to ask you the question. I mean, ARA, known as a very significant landholder in Melbourne, absolutely professional in everything you do, and obviously what you do there in Southgate is you know, one of, as you said, one of the most most loved and postcard locations in the city. So it was a little bit surprising to see a number of submissions that came in to us from everyone from the Langham Hotel to business owners at Southgate to residents in Key West, saying that they felt that they hadn't been consulted by ARA around your development plans on the site. Just wondering what your thoughts are about those submissions.
You know, thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. As you can appreciate, this is a very complex site with a vast and a varied amount of stakeholders. We have tried through the processes with the City of Melbourne, the officers and DELP, to try and communicate as best as we can in relation to how we can coordinate and work together to realise the intrinsic value of this site for the greater City of Melbourne. And really for us, we think there's an ongoing possibility to continue to work with our stakeholders to continue to realise everyone's objectives as part of this development.
All right, thanks for that, Rowan. I mean, we're obviously very keen to see development go ahead in Melbourne and help Melbourne build back better, but this is obviously going to be a very big and complex project. So I think the city will be looking to see an exceptional standard of community engagement on this going forward. Any further questions for Rowan? All right, in that case, thanks very much for addressing us this evening.
Thank you.
Our next submitter is Brendan Rogers from Urbis, who requested the opportunity to speak for us too. You know the rules, Brendan, no more than 3 minutes, please.
Yes. Could I have the next slide, please? Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors. Really do appreciate the opportunity to speak to you tonight about this. As Rowan said, this is truly a city-shaping project. The size of the site is almost 20,000 square metres, which is the equivalent of a city block. So it is a major piece. And as you saw from Mr. Parsons' slides, there's substantial work being done across the whole of the site to deliver on some outcomes in regard to this. A major workplace, a major piece of open space. The work that will be done, if you can, next slide, please. Really will complement a number of aspects in regard to both the City of Melbourne and the state, both in regard to the open space objectives that the city is trying to achieve, the work on the North Bank with the Green Line, which came to the Future Melbourne Committee at its last meeting, the work that the council is doing along the promenade, the great work that's been done on South Bank Boulevard in regard to the open space, and really the work that's been done with your offices, with DELP, with Creative Victoria in the Arts Precinct. It really has been a detailed analysis of how to open up a site that was a catalyst when it first started. This South Gate project was the first major development on the south side of the river that really started to open up the capital city. But unfortunately, at the time, it really didn't maybe foresee what would come in the future. And so it wasn't well integrated, wasn't permeable for the site. And this is a major consideration of the design. Nikki Drobus from FKA will talk to that, about how to build it into the city. And you heard about the contributions in regard to the connections back to the Arts Precinct, because that is an important aspect. And this great opportunity to deliver a 2,000 square metre open space at the St Kilda Road level that complements and will be connected to the River Promenade. So really a lot of intricate considerations in regard to dealing with this to deliver on this project. So it's been an important component. The question earlier in regard to the building envelope, that is a sort of a planning mechanism in regard to it. A lot of further work has been done with your offices and with DELP talking through how that's developed up in regard to the detail. Nikki Drobus will show you some of this imagery. Mr. Parsons already showed you an indication of the further detailed analysis being done, responding to some of the conditions that you've seen in the paper before you. So a consideration in regard to how it fits well within this area, both at Promenade level, at St Kilda Road level, right through to the office building. So a thank you for your time.
Brendan, any questions for Brendan? Okay, in that case, thanks very much for addressing us this evening. And I now call on Nikki Drobus from Fender Katsalitis to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall Commons.
Thank you. Thank you. This is a great new room. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Mayor and Deputy Mayor and Councillors. Brendan has left me with an extra slide, so I'm going to ask for the next slide, please, and go a little bit fast here. But one of the very key points of this entire master plan is the unlocking of the site. So maximising permeability and connection through the site is paramount and very unlike the situation we currently have on the site. If you could go to the next slide, please. So that permeability and connection through the site continue at ground level, as demonstrated by this plan shown on the screen. The site opens up to embrace and welcome people in by having numerous legible entry points and providing clear lines of sight. The site also benefits from a 160-metre-long frontage to the promenade, which will be highly activated with food and beverage tenancies housed in a series of carefully articulated buildings. And importantly, there will now also be a new point of address and access via stair and lift directly from City Road into the precinct, and also from Southgate Avenue and the promenade. Next, please. The new 21-level tower is located in the centre of the site and provides nearly 40,000 square metres of new premium office space. It will meet the future needs of Melbourne and will enrich the diversity of uses and population within broader South Bank. The building is designed to provide the very best views, light and amenity for tenants. This also includes access to a landscaped outdoor terrace, terraces, on the northern facade, which you can see here in the centre of the building volume. The facade is articulated by a measured and carefully scaled bronze grid, which visually grounds the building. Next, please. The park is effectively the community heart of the scheme, providing 2,000 square metres of deep soil planting. This enables mature planting with considerable vegetation. Next slide, please. The park provides an opportunity for people to enjoy northern sunshine in a green environment, and as it's located on the northern edge of the site, offers remarkable views and a new perspective across the Yarra towards the CBD. Next, please. This view of the park describes its overall scale and easy connection to the promenade, with a stair and lift access at both the eastern and western edges of the park. And it is designed to provide a variety of experiences. So you'll not only be able to travel through this space, but there will be areas for rest and play. And acknowledging in the design, detailed design, there is a way to travel with this. Next. Next slide. Was that it? Okay. Sorry, just if I can wrap up.
It's okay. Yeah, Nikki, please feel free to finish.
Oh, okay. Thank you. This new park will evolve into the evening hours with a welcoming and vibrant environment embracing Melbourne's community and visitors alike. This, of course, is, as Brendan mentioned and Rowan mentioned, holistically, a once-in-a-generation opportunity to unlock this key strategic site with significant public benefit. And finally, thank you all for your consideration. ARA and the wider consultant team are committed to delivering an excellent outcome for this site and for Melbourne's future. Thank you.
Thanks, Nikki. Any questions for Nikki? Okay. Thank you very much for addressing us this evening.
Great.
If there's no other submitters, I will now move a motion which is appearing up. Oh, my apologies. Have I missed a request to speak? Sorry, what's your name?
Damien.
Okay, Damien.
Yeah, that's right.
Hmm? I'm happy for you to speak, Damien, please.
Yes, I think I'd...
Must be something wrong here with my script, but yes, go ahead, Damien. You have 3 minutes to address it.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor, and congratulations on your new meeting space, and thank you for the opportunity to submit tonight. And these submissions are made on behalf of Langham Hotel, which is situated immediately adjacent to the proposed development site. But critically, I think, and as we've seen from some of the material that's provided tonight, it's not just adjacent to the site, it's a critical part of the site that's proposed to be developed. And Langham is one of Melbourne's leading luxury hotels and is a centrepiece of South Bank and an icon of the Melbourne hospitality industry. Langham is concerned that there will be significant negative impacts as a result of this development. And it's also concerned that the development is an inappropriate response to the context of the site and as a result of its bulk and scale. The development will impact on Langham's easements and a number of other property rights will be unilaterally removed or varied in ways that Langham does not agree with or consent to. Consultation with Langham and other parties throughout this process has been inadequate. Council's delegate report notes that it has had regard to a number of issues that have been raised by Langham, but with respect, our review of the incorporated document and the amendments to the incorporated document don't reflect or evidence the fact that sufficient regard has been had to a number of significant concerns that have been raised. And while we know that consultation, while we're going through a 20-part 4 ministerial amendment process here that will result in an incorporated document, there is no doubt that DELP and the Minister will place significant stock in the recommendation that comes out of the Council. And Council's recommendation will carry significant weight as part of this process. We are concerned that the development will seriously and negatively affect the operation of the Langham on a permanent basis. Sunlight to rooms will be lost, blocked in a number of places. Access to loading bays and the port cachet will be compromised. fire egress pathways and the impacts on those has not yet been clearly understood and mitigated. And these issues, amongst a range of others, have been identified in extensive submissions that have been provided to the Minister and copied to the Council, and we would implore you to take those into account. Unfortunately, a lot of the material that is referred to in the Council Delegates report, Langham has not seen. We have not seen, for example, the incorporated plans dated 28 January 2021. So Langham has not seen what the final proposed building form of the development will take, has not seen the easement plan, the early works plan, the staging plan, or the February 21 preliminary traffic assessment. And these are all critical. And if I can just take as an example one particular issue of concern to Langham, and that is the proposed reconfiguration of Southgate Avenue. I'll wrap this up very quickly, Deputy Lord Mayor. There is a concern that Southgate Avenue is to be reconfigured. That will result in a significant impact on the Langham's loading bay and could indeed compromise the extent to which the Langham loading bays will still operate, particularly as a result of the introduction of a new pedestrian pathway along Southgate Avenue. And while the Delegate's report notes that any redesign of Southgate Avenue will need to be resolved between the applicant and Council's Infrastructure and Assets branch, this unfortunately is kicking the can down the road on a significant potential impact. And it's for these reasons, and it's because of the lack of consultation and the lack of consideration given to the impacts on a number of neighbours and adjoining landowners and affected parties, that we implore the Council to defer endorsing the proposed planning scheme amendment.
All right, thank you for that submission, Damien. Can I ask, is ARA the landlord of the Langham Hotel?
No, it's not.
Okay, what about the podium part of the Langham Hotel?
No.
Okay.
I believe not. I think any of the real estate that comprises the Langham is owned by Langham.
Okay, all right.
But there is a lot of sort of a direct interface between the Langham and ARA's proposed development.
All right. And secondly, can I just ask a question? The matters that you've put us to us this evening, have you put them directly to ARA?
Yeah, they have, and they've also been fed directly into the Minister's office as part of the process around the 20-part 4 planning scheme amendment.
And have you received a response from ARA to date to these questions and requests?
I think there have been some discussions around a limited range of issues, but a number of these points have not been, there hasn't been engagement on all of these points, and many of the issues that I've raised remain unresolved.
All right, thank you very much, Damien. Larry Parsons, can I ask you, Damien's raised some points about not having access to information, incorporated documents, easement plans, etc. It does, I guess. Yeah, please return to your seat, Damien. And so that does raise, I guess, questions about procedural fairness. What's your response?
It's, as the Minister is the responsible authority, it would have to be DELP who released those documents to anybody who was requiring them. We cannot do that. We are aware that there has been discussions between the Langham and ARA about easements in particular. We know that DELP has taken that fairly seriously and has sought their own legal advice, which, as I said previously, we are not party to. We do know that the incorporated document removes the possibilities under the planning scheme for a permit to remove easements, but the Subdivision Act still has some guarantees, which the Langham has noted in their submission, including there's Section 23 is one way to remove easements, and excuse the technicalities, but that requires the consent of the landowners, including the Langham. And the other option is Section 36, which also requires a consent or a study by the responsible authority, who in this case would be the City of Melbourne, as to the impact of removing those easements, positive and negative. We haven't had any request to start that, and nor do we have the detailed information to do it as yet.
All right, thank you for that, Larry. So look, Damien, I think you've raised some material points there this evening, but I think given while we are a submitter and we're obviously an influential submitter, the Minister is ultimately
the decision maker here, and as we've heard from Larry, is controlling the process. So I think the matters, I would encourage you to continue to take up the matters you've raised with us this evening, which I think are material with DELP and the Minister. So I will proceed to put a motion up on the screen. This is an amended motion, and I'll just give councillors a moment to have a look at that, and then I'll look for a councillor to second that motion.
Chair, having had a hand in drafting this, I'm keen to second it, but the part 12, paragraph 12, we also added the words Minister for Planning and, so the purpose of the alt motion was to directly advise the Minister advising the okay. department. We're not just relying on the department to do our political work as well. This is a significant matter.
Good point, Councillor Leppard. So I'm going to move a further amended motion and look for a councillor to second it.
I will second that motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I'll now speak to this further amended motion. I think the first point to be made here, which we've heard, we've discussed several times this evening, is that this is an amendment to an incorporated document. It's a little planning scheme inside the planning scheme, and ultimately it's the Minister for Planning, Richard Wynne, who will decide upon this, presumably on the advice of his department, and we are submitters to that. In terms of the – and so many of the, rules and controls which would normally apply in an application like this do not apply here. In terms of the applications before us, I think there are a number of very positive aspects which should be highlighted. The first is clearly from what we've seen so far, there is a really strong commitment to architectural and design excellence with this proposal, as there should be, given its location. As you said, Rowan, this is truly a postcard location in Melbourne. You see it on postcards, you see it behind newsreaders when they read the news out of Melbourne. It is one of our most iconic riverfront locations. It's part of how people see Melbourne. And so it's only appropriate that as Melburnians, we absolutely are looking for the highest standards in a development at Southgate in terms of the building itself and also the architectural design standards that are achieved there. I also think that there are a number of aspects to the proposal which are a significant improvement on what is there at Southgate. At the moment, I think the Denton Corker Marshall Southgate was a really groundbreaking project for Melbourne. It helped Melburnians discover the south bank of the river, and I think some of the design features that we saw tonight will help Melburnians to, in even greater numbers, discover and love that south bank of the river. And in particular, I'm referring to the cleverness of the permeability in the site, and I think those new paths through the site will be a significant improvement and will allow even more people to make their way along the south bank of our Yarra River and enjoy everything it has to offer. I also think the 2,000 square metre plus new public open green space is going to be absolutely brilliant. I think there was a long debate, I know, amongst officers around what the status of that space should be, whether it should be public space managed by the City of Melbourne. In the end, the recommendation is that it will be publicly accessible space managed by ARA with a carefully worded agreement around how that will operate. But, yeah, I do want to acknowledge that and say thank you. That's a great feature that will be a real addition to the south bank of the river and, again, give the opportunity for even more our Melburnians to enjoy the wonderful aspect looking back towards the to the city from the south bank. The motion that's before us this evening is an amended one to one which was drafted by officers, And the amendment really goes to one point, which I want to try and draw out, and that is that the building envelope does appear to be quite large. It appears to be bigger than the other buildings sort of in the that cluster of buildings there at South Bank, and does seem – and it is going higher than many of them as well. And given this is such a postcard location, and if we don't get this right as a city, the consequences for Melbourne are, I think, very, very significant. The recommendation there in that motion is that the proposed incorporated document and the massing and development envelope plans should be referred to the Victorian Design Review Panel for consideration. Now, I would expect that a development like this one would, in the ordinary course of things, go before the VDRP. If a development like this one didn't go before the VDRP, then I don't think there's any purpose to having the VDRP in Victoria. I guess the additional requirement that we are suggesting here is that the massing and development envelope plans, that is the building envelope, should actually go to the VDRP as well, so that the minister can get feedback upon that envelope ahead of making a decision about amendments to the incorporated document. And yeah, I do think that will ultimately lead us to getting an even better development on this site. The final point I will make is just around community consultation. And, you know, there's been a real cross-section of Melbourne that we've heard from in the submissions here, you know, from famous restaurateurs like Lino at La Camera, from upstanding residents like Mem, from, you know, prestigious hotel owners like the Langham, you know, legendary hotel operators here in Melbourne, all coming before us saying, hey, this consultation process has been unsatisfactory. So I would implore the ARA to really put in place exemplary consultation processes with the community, with your stakeholders going forward. I will put on the record this evening that this application will be coming back to the City of Melbourne again once you've gone through the agreement around the building envelope, and when the final design is resolved, we would normally, in the normal course things, have that final design come back to the city again. So I'll put you on notice now that I'll be asking when this comes back in a little down the road from now, I'll be certainly asking, okay, what's the consultation that's gone on to get us to that point. So on that note, I intend to vote for the amended motion before us, and I call on Councillor Leppett to speak to it.
Thank you, Chair. I agree, of course, and I agree with the applicant when this statement is made. This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to unlock this key strategic site. And I want to make it very clear that I'm genuinely excited about the potential for increased permeability throughout not just Southgate, but the three buildings as we know them, if I can describe it that way, but the entire site, but also the increased public open space, or private but publicly accessible open space that we are looking at here. These are genuinely exciting things. But when we're talking about a once-in-a-generation opportunity to unlock a key strategic site, we have to acknowledge that this really is one of the most important civic sites in our city, and try and think about what our role as advisors to the minister needs to be. It's a very difficult thing in this position, having received a report on Thursday, to decide as the custodians of the City of Melbourne processes, which is the only public process potentially for considering what the incorporated document should say, what our advice to the minister should be. This is a rushed and difficult process for the councillors. Certainly that's the way I feel it. I do agree with the Deputy Lord Mayor that given the significance of this site and given that the minister has agreed that an incorporated document through a planning scheme amendment is the process that should be chosen, which of course is not a planning application. There's no third party access. There's no third-party rights associated with that. There's no formal consultation processes deciding what the master plan should and shouldn't say. That we encourage as much different pieces of advice going to the minister before he makes that decision on what the master plan should be and what that building envelope should be. The report before us today is excellent. Our officers have done a brilliant job. Normally with internal referrals to our urban design experts, we'll see a little bit more. I'm just going to keep talking. Is that fine? Okay. We normally get a little bit more information about the details of what the urban design qualities of the applications are and where improvements could be made. The report says that there's general agreement and these have been picked up throughout the process. I accept that and I'm sure that there have been improvements along the way, but what we don't have is a clear independent urban design critique of the building massing strategy that I'm quite yet comfortable enough to go, yes, we know this is the right building massing strategy for this once in a generation opportunity to change the cityscape of Melbourne. I don't want to make that final decision. Thank goodness I don't have to. The minister is the final decision maker. I'm just suggesting here that we should go with the alternative motion, which is to invite the Victorian Design Review Panel, the Office of the Victorian Government Architect Process, to feed in one more piece of advice into the minister before a decision's made on the building massing strategy. Dare I say that those extra six or a few more weeks would allow some of these other issues to be resolved. Obviously, once the Future Melbourne Committee considers these things, the nature of how these processes wrap up changes, because this is now a lot more of a public process than it was a week ago. But we are coming to the pointy end, and we should all accept that the minister is going to make a decision of some sort. Whether or not he agrees that there should be a VDRP process, whether or not the applicant agrees there should be a VDRP process, it's quite clear in the resolution here that there's a strong level of support from the City of Melbourne for many of the aspirations that are being put forward by the applicant, and there's a series of conditions that should apply. But I do think that extra level of advice and making sure that the final part of this process is as robust as possible on the urban design advice through to the minister, the one person in the state who's going to make a decision for this once-in-a-generation opportunity to unlock this key strategic site, that we do it properly. And so that's the purpose of the alternative motion. But, again, I do commend the applicant for what is a genuinely exciting series of proposals.
Thank you, Councillor Lippert. Are there any other speakers for or against the amended alternative motion? Lord Mayor.
Good. I think that it is appropriate to make some comments because our chair and deputy chair of this portfolio spend a lot of time with officers diving into the detail, and I very much agree with the comments that have been made, but I think it is important that other councillors also comment on this project given its scale. I absolutely accept that the ambition of the project as presented to us really reflects the ambition that we have for that precinct, and thinking of the arts precinct that is evolving to the south, and thinking that since the 1990s, when this was the stellar and somewhat lonely also a development on the river, to consider what has grown around this development is also really important. I think it really speaks to why a development on this site is appropriate as we go forward. It's been 30 years and I'm sure this is looking at the next 100, let's say. I'm very conscious, though, that there are established other businesses, workers, residents, uses around that precinct that are also fabulous. And I would imagine that just as this project really opens up the permeability of the site, part of that is to have all of those uses, all of the people that are currently in the precinct and that will be attracted into this Southgate site, moving freely and wanting to move freely between the buildings and all of the uses. That sense of future collaboration and cooperation is real given the significance of this site. So I'm really acknowledging that the owners want to maximise the footprint of this iconic site. I acknowledge, I think the open spaces look magnificent and something that we need more of. You've probably heard the South Bank Residents Association and many other residents and the City Council talking about how can we deliver more open, valuable open space into this precinct given the proliferation, particularly of residents. And so I really welcome and acknowledge all of that. There are many elements to like about the project. I think that what comments tonight and the amended motion really reflects is that sense of wanting to ensure that we are incorporating all of the established uses and businesses and residents in that area and making sure that the project as it goes forward finds that balance between maximising the footprint but also adding value at all levels into what is a very important and closely knit community in every sense of the word down there. So I am supporting the motion tonight, and I am encouraging both Delpin, the minister, and also the proponent and everyone involved to see if this next part of the process or the ongoing parts of this process can really incorporate more of the comments and reflections and feedback of others that are in the same precinct. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? In that case, I'll put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. I'll declare that carried unanimously. The next item before us this evening is agenda item 6.3, planning permit application TP-2020-427 for the Yarra River adjacent to Lower Promenade South Bank, north of 4 Riverside Quay. And Larry Parsons, I think we're going to call upon you as our head of statutory planning to make a brief presentation to us about this application on this unusual location on the river.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Could I have the first slide, please? You will see outlined the rectangle in white on the river of the location, which is approximately 60 metres long and 10 metres wide. It is between the Sandwich Bridge and the Evan Walker Bridge on the south side in front of the Riverside Quay area. Next slide, please. The plans show at the bottom that it is a two-level structure. The bottom level is fairly complete with the restaurant use which is proposed. The application is for a restaurant, not a tavern. Obviously, if in the course of time the use is changed or does not agree with that definition, there would be an enforcement case. The upper level at the top of the slide is, as you see, a reduced area, and that is unroofed except for the bar, the donut shape in the middle, and that has been, the roof has been pulled back through negotiations to improve the views across the river. I should add that the servicing is done through new servicing being put in place in the Lower Promenade by Parks Victoria, who are the land manager, and they do not require a permit for those works. So that includes things like electricity, water supply, and even a sewage connection for pumping out sewage. Next slide, please. Some elevations where you can see the sort of length and size of the proposal. You will also see some at the top slide, the top of the slide, you'll see some aquatic planting, which is being proposed and is of interest to our landscape team because they are proposing something similar in another location. Next slide. These are the views. This is from the west, looking back, and you see the Sandwich Bridge in the background. There are some conditions. One is to make transparent that western wall, the wall at the end of the of the pontoon that you can see there. And there's some conditions about the size of signage as well. Next slide, please. And this is from the other end, from the east end, where you're seeing the more open part of the pontoon where there is no roof and no second story. Next, that is actually the end of the presentation.
Thanks, Larry. Any questions for Larry? Actually, I'll ask you two questions if you don't mind, Larry. So just looking through some of the submissions from folks in South Bank, the question of noise came up a lot, in particular the fact that there'll be opportunity for amplified music to be played until 11 p.m. and then sort of lower volume music played till 1 a.m. Can you please give us your thoughts on that?
Okay, as it is a restaurant application, we do not have control, and because the restaurant does not trigger a permit as a use, we do not have control over the times or the music. The noise will be controlled, obviously, under the EPA regulations, and our local laws would also cover it. So we can, if there is abuse or criticism or complaints, investigate those, but it is not a planning matter as such. Having said that, the applicant has given the indication of the times they wish to operate, which is until 1 a.m. And the live music will be until 11 p.m. on Thursdays to Saturdays and 9 p.m. Sunday. But they are indications. We cannot control those as a restaurant use, which is normal for all restaurant uses across the municipality.
Okay, and thank you for that. And second question is around waste management. So I know the waste management strategy for this venue has changed. Again, a lot of the submissions went to some concerns around that. Dan O'Keefe, the South Bank Residents Association, and others raised it. Are you satisfied that we now have a not just satisfactory but exemplary waste management strategy in place for this venue?
There were extensive consultations with our waste team, and there were changes made. And so what is proposed in the end are three alternative pickup points on South Bank Boulevard, Southgate Avenue, where the waste will be delivered at the appropriate times. It will be stored on the pontoon until those times happen, and it will be picked up from the loading zones which exist in those on-street locations.
All right, well, given the riverside location, getting that right is going to be absolutely critical. Any questions for Larry? Councillor Ball.
Thank you, Larry. I did wonder about a recommendation that appears on page 27 about creating the providing for a microhabitat to develop on the underside for the benefit of the local fish, and also deflecting waterborne debris in the river. Can you tell us whether that has made it through to the conditions or not, and if not, why?
It's a recommendation. It's not something that under the planning scheme we can oblige. The applicant is very keen to have aquatic environment, so we are hopeful that they will take that on board seriously.
Thank you, Larry. Any further questions for Larry? All right. Thank you very much for addressing us on this matter. I now call on Paul Waterson from the Australian Venue Co, who requested the opportunity to address the committee via Zoom in relation to this matter, to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome virtually to Town Hall, Paul.
Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor, and thank you, councillors. The genesis of this application goes all the way back to 2016, when the Premier appointed the Lower Yarra River Management Advisory Committee, and then it was further supported by the City of Melbourne Tourism Action Plan of 2016-19. And it was with this background that Australian Venue Co responded to Parks Victoria's two-stage expression of interest process for the Yarra River activations. We were awarded preferred proponent status from Parks Victoria in July 2019, and during the 2 years since we were awarded the preferred proponent status, we've worked very constructively in our view with the key stakeholders to adapt and evolve the offering to meet their needs, which included a substantial redesign of the activation, which resulted in a substantial reduction in visual bulk and patron capacity. And look, as a result of all this work, we feel we have a really differentiated venue that will undoubtedly bring people back to the city. There's no doubt that post the lockdown last year, people are heeding the medical advice and preferring to dine in outdoor and semi-enclosed spaces. And I think City of Melbourne have recognised this through the excellent outdoor dining initiatives. It's really having a huge impact on the recovery of our industry. The venue will employ at least 70 people in the City of Melbourne. We'll also spend $2 million with local food and beverage suppliers per year, and importantly drive 240,000 annual visitation to the CBD at a time that we need that more than ever. And I refer the committee to the letter of support from Parks Victoria, who's been a great partner in this process. So we thank you for your consideration and hopefully your approval of the activation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Paul. Any questions for Paul? Okay. In that case, I will move the motion, which should now be appearing on the screen. Give councillors a moment to read that, and then I look to a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Campbell. As we have heard from Paul, the background to this application is that this new pontoon and venue located on the Yarra River has come out of a policy decision and process which has been run by Parks Victoria. There's been a multi-stage expression of interest process and a two-year negotiation between the ultimately successful applicant, Australian Venue Co, and Parks Victoria. This evening we're here to consider the planning application, a planning permit application associated with this new venue, and to assess how it sits alongside City of Melbourne policy. In reflecting on that, I guess I would begin by noting that I think Melbourne over the last decade or more now has done a very good job with Yarra River activation. If I think of Pony Fish and Arbory afloat, these are venues which have become some of the most popular in our city, and I think have made people think of the Yarra River in a different way in terms of being a place which they can get alongside and enjoy feasting and festivities. In referring to the Birrarung strategy 2019 for the Yarra River, covered in the officer's report, the finding is that this proposal does respond positively to the principles articulated for South Bank in that strategy. Namely, it supports a diversity of activities, noting that the proposed use of the land as a restaurant is consistent with the theme of the South Bank promenade as a feasting and festivities area. And secondly, it's consistent with the strategic imperative of visual accessibility, and the visual impact of views on the Yarra resulting from the pontoon has been minimised through design. And in that regard, I do want to acknowledge the good work of our officers who have worked with the proponent to ensure that some of those important sight lines are maintained. So that's included removing some of the panels on some of the balustrades and also other features of the pontoon. And as I understand it, the pontoon itself has been moved as well as a result of City of Melbourne recommendation, again, to preserve those important sight lines down to the river from the promenade down the stairwells, and also maintain those sight lines to the Sandridge Bridge, which is a much-loved bridge across the Yarra.
So taking all those factors into account, I'm very happy to support this motion. Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Although we have heard tonight about the rather lengthy journey Australian Venue Company has been on to get to this point, and I can understand how difficult that has been, it is remarkable that this is happening at a time that Melbourne perhaps needs it most. As we all know, our hospitality industry and our city more generally is still recovering from the effects of the COVID lockdown and the pandemic, and it is an exciting opportunity for us as part of our recovery efforts and our revitalisation efforts to know that new venues and venues of this quality are opening in our city. We know that an important part of our revitalisation will occur along the river. It's a critical part of our city, and venues of this quality make such a difference to attracting people, both visitors, workers, and people who might not otherwise venture to South Bank to explore a new area. As the Deputy Lord Mayor has remarked, it's something South Bank is doing so well. It is becoming iconic with Ponyfish, Arbury Afloat, and an expansion of this type of venue is something Melbourne could become famous for. As I was reading over the details of this, I was delighted to learn about the idea of using the native species that will be part of the landscaping in the dishes that the cocktails will be served in this restaurant. Iconic quality venues like this are all the more reason for Melburnians to get out and support our hospitality industry. And I am excited about the possibility of yet another venue that encourages us to support the industry at the time it needs it most.
Thank you, Councillor Campbell. Are there any other councillors who wish to speak for or against this motion? Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with the sentiment of both yourself and the seconder entirely, and now I will speak against the motion. The land manager is Parks Victoria, and they've consented to the application of this type. We all accept that. There's no planning permit required for the use. We've heard the reasons why that is the case. And this is Capital City Zone Schedule 1. There's a whole range of uses that are as of right. The only permit trigger, well, apart from reducing the bicycle parking rates, the only permit trigger, the meaningful permit trigger, is for building and works, primarily under that Capital City Zone. Obviously, this is the wrong zone for the Yarra. I don't really think that the Yarra should be Capital City Zone schedule anything. It should be Public Park and Recreation Zone. It's the Yarra. But we're going to assess this application under the scheme as the scheme exists, and that's the way we're going to do it, and that's completely fair enough. I completely sympathise with our planners and our delegate, who have all done an absolutely excellent job trying to figure out whether or not a permit should issue without strong policy guidance in the Melbourne planning scheme or even outside the Melbourne planning scheme as to whether or not a permit for building and works should issue to build something on a pontoon on the Yarra in the capital city zone. Like, it's a bit of a mess, the process. I think we should acknowledge that. But our officers have done an extraordinary job. I point out that Parks Vic's the land manager, and if they provided support for any Section 1 use, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. They could provide support for the thing that gets built on the pontoon to be a gallery or a school or an office or a shop. There's still a question for us as the City of Melbourne and the administrators of the planning scheme as to what policy we consider and why when deciding whether or not a permit for building and works should issue for building on a pontoon on the river. So where I do disagree with the recommendation that's before us is where we've drawn on that policy from outside the scheme. So the Chair, you've certainly referred to the Yarra Birrarung strategy, and we've all supported that strategy as an excellent strategy. And there's no right or wrong interpretation of that strategy. And so this is not a criticism of anyone who will have a different view, and I'm sure I'll be voted down tonight, and that's fine. But I just do want to take councillors to the next level of detail below what it means to be a feasting and festivities precinct. I'm sure this refers to the promenade and not the river. The Feasting and Festivities Precinct. South Bank Promenade is one of city's busiest public spaces, featuring a notable concentration of waterfront dining and drinking arts and cultural venues. The opportunity afforded by the northern aspect and ready population should be further maximised. Pockets of sunlit lawn space should be retained and new civic areas created in the most populated areas, such as nearby Evan Walker Bridge. Queensbridge Square also holds much potential for improved amenity and recognition of its important cultural location. I don't believe the Yarrabirrung strategy encourages new semi-permanent or pontoon-based activities. It certainly encourages temporary activation of the river, things on boats going through from time to time. It doesn't explicitly or even, I believe, implicitly encourage activations of the type that we've seen. Yes, Parks Victoria is the land manager and they have said this is a good thing to do. I accept that. But I still don't believe that we have the policy framework that says this is something that should be supported under the Melbourne Planning Scheme or elsewhere. More importantly than that, though, the Yarrabirrung strategy does have guiding principles for built form activation proposals in the river corridor. On page 42, one of these principles is called public. It says, sustain the Yarra River, Birrung, as being first and foremost a public place for people to enjoy, with key pedestrian movement zones, bridge landings, key views and waterfront features kept free of obstructions. And another is number four, visual accessibility. Maintain openness to the river as much as possible and ensure views to the water from adjoining riverbank areas are not concealed over long distances. In the summary of the Yarrabirrung strategy, in the policy summary, there's a few concise encapsulations of what the whole document talks about. Number nine is ensure unrestricted public waterfront access. Number 12 is promote activities that support a public, safe and attractive waterfront. And number 13 is rationalise existing and proposed clutter to ensure unobstructed appreciation to identified views and landmarks. So I just disagree that the Yarrabirrung strategy should be relied on as the basis to support a building and works permit for constructing on a pontoon on the Yarra. If it was on the promenade, absolutely, that's the festivities and feasting precinct that we're all talking about. But we now need to think about the precedent. If we issue a building and works permit for a three-year setup on the pontoon on the Yarra here, well, we have deemed that it is within the policy framework of the City of Melbourne that is what we expect along the South Bank Promenade. Now, that is fine if that is the way we wish to interpret it, and it may well be the way that the councillors wish to interpret it tonight. But that then says that we will have more and more and more of these. It also means that in 3 years' time, when we ask the applicant to seek another permit, because the permit will expire, we will have very little basis upon which to say no, because the tribunal will say, well, hang on, you said yes 3 years ago. Why are you saying no this time? And so the reason I called this matter in, and I did call this matter in, is because at the very least we need to have a debate in public about the policy issues that are being unearthed by this application. This is a very significant precedent issue that we're talking about here, and I am very worried about the way we are drawing on policy from inside and outside the scheme to support a building and works permit on a pontoon in the capital city zone on the Yarra. I do not think a permit should issue. Finally, I have absolute sympathy for the applicant. Parks Victoria is trying to make some money, and they have gone through an EOI process, and 3 years ago they've found a preferred applicant, but they put all of the risk onto the applicant and said, it is your job to get a planning permit. No one at ever point has ever made it clear then that it would take 3 years to get to this point, or that the risks involved include the fact that there is absolutely no policy basis for supporting a restaurant on the river like this. There's so much discretion here. Now, it's probably all going to be a moot point because I think I know the way the vote is going today, but I really do think that the scheme needs to be tidied up so that we can provide clarity for all parties. But based on the information in the scheme today, I still don't think that the scheme supports a building and works permit on the river. On the river. that precedent is something that we shouldn't be supporting. And so that's the threshold issue that we're considering tonight. It's not just whether a permit should issue, it's whether we're happy to set that precedent. And I don't believe we should. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Lippert. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? Lord Mayor.
I'm glad we're having the debate because this is something that's new and certainly something worth discussing. I take the comments of Councillor Lippert and the mover and the seconder, and certainly the effort that the officers have gone to find a way to see if this fits or not, given that we don't have a precedent and it doesn't easily fit within any other policies or strategies. But I do think at a time like this, and it's amazing, I think, as Councillor Campbell said, that it's come at this time, and for us to try new things. And we've shown that during the last 12 months in particular, that this is the time for us to be thinking differently and doing things differently as we revitalise our economy. And it is about the economy, but it is also about how we are bringing activity and energy and vibrancy to places that are really suffering as a result of the pandemic. And there's no doubt that something new, and I think something where the time over the last 3 years of coming to this point of a design that is sympathetic to many of the items raised by Councillor Lippert in terms of sight lines, in terms of how it's going to interact between the promenade and the river, has been done with a lot of detail, and I think the result is something certainly worth supporting. The fact that it does fall within existing strategies in terms of objectives such as revitalisation and the Yarrabirarrung, it does also, I think, sit well within the sort of investment that we're looking for under the draft economic development strategy that we will be considering later tonight. And that sense of risk-taking by the private sector that can be supported in a new public realm, which is the river, is certainly, I think, something worth trying. I take the point about permanency, and I don't think it has to be that way. The fact that it's 3 years is important because we're not going to see that sort of investment in something new, something that's an innovation, something that's quite different, if there's not a sense that it's there for a time for the proponent to be able to see a return on what is going to be a massive investment in building this facility. So I accept the points made. I do also note that this comes as a result of Parks Vic working with the Lower Yarra Reference Group that had lots of different parties involved, consultation, ways in which we want to activate the river. And I know from sitting in other venues on the river and near the river that giving new perspectives to the river and the activity on the river and the incorporation also of the native plantings and benefits that can be trialled and tested as a result of this project, all are benefits from my perspective. It will bring new visitors to the city. I hope it does also get the support of locals. The Australian Venue Co is a very good operator of venues around the city. I think they're deserving of respect and trust in the way that they're going to operate this venue. And I know that, as with other venues, that they will want that support from locals. So I do note the items raised, particularly around waste, cleanliness and safety and noise. I know Paul presented tonight via Zoom, and I'm sure, Paul, you're still listening, and it'll be terrific to see how you incorporate that feedback into the way that you operate the venue. But for all the reasons I've said, I think now is the time for us to be trying new things in our city, and I'm excited about this project.
Councillor Ball.
Thank you. I share Councillor Leppard's concerns about the precedent that this would set. I'm also concerned that it seems contrary to some significant decisions we have made in recent weeks about our Yarra Birrarung strategy and our Green Line concept plan that seeks to respect the Yarra as a ecosystem, as a holistic natural entity that shouldn't be up for put on the market to the highest bidder. And I've learnt a new word, riparian, in considering the document proposing the Green Line and the importance of restoring natural riverbanks to the Yarra Birrarung. And that, if we are to do that on the northern bank, that makes the significance of this precedent for the south bank even greater. If what is currently a temporary floating structure on the north bank is then perhaps moved to the south or other precedents are set for building structures such as these on the south bank, I do not wish to set that precedent, and I don't see how this is a temporary, mere temporary exception that we are making for the reasons that Councillor Leppert has outlined. We are setting a significant precedent, and please regard that with the due gravity it deserves.
Thank you, Councillor Ball. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion before us? Okay, I might quickly exercise my right of reply given the debate we've had, and I also agree we're, I think, better for the debate. I guess want to emphasise a point about the Australian Venue Co, who, and I do hope that Paul Waterson is still on the line or tuned in, and just make the point that Australian Venue Co are one of Australia's largest and most respected operators of venues, and they have a lot of experience in operating venues in, you know, dense urban environments, in inner city neighbourhoods, and they have a very strong record of knowing how to run a venue professionally in a way which is respectful to the community and complies with all the regulations and requirements that are put upon venues nowadays. And I'm very confident that we will see this venue run by Australian Venue Co operated to those very, very high standards, because it will need to be, because as we've heard this evening, there have been a lot of submissions from concerned residents around waste management, around noise, around general amenity. And so this is going to have to be a venue that is operated to the highest standards, and I feel confident that Australian Venue Co will rise and to and exceed that challenge. Can I also just finally say that I am not concerned about the precedent that is set by approving this permit this evening, if indeed that is the way the vote goes. This is a permit for 3 years. We as a council group will still be here in 3 years, and I can tell you unequivocally that if it comes to pass that this new venue doesn't align with our vision for the Yarra River Birrarung strategy, then I'll have no hesitation in not renewing the permit or some other application which comes along in the same vein if we find that a venue operating on this location doesn't operate in a way that is consistent with the way the strategy envisages. So I certainly say I, for one, as a councillor, will be sleeping easy knowing that we are not binding ourselves forevermore around this new operation on the pontoon on the Yarra. So on that note, I will put the motion to the vote. All those in favour? Certainly.
Just in connection to what you just said, when does the 3 years commence and therefore expire? It doesn't commence tonight. It will commence when?
It would be commencing at the time that the venue commences operation and gets its so you've got to go through a building permit, construction permit, and then when its occupancy and license is granted. Is that right, Larry? So.
It's actually 3 years from the start of the operation, We're just confirming that.
So it's very unlikely to be within this term of council.
Sorry, Chair. Point of order. The debate has been closed.
I'll now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Hakim, Councillor Campbell, Councillor Rees, Lord Mayor, Councillor Louis, Councillor Doige, Councillor Griffiths, Councillor Cheng. All those councillors opposed. Councillor Leppett, Councillor Ball. I declare the motion carried. All right, the next agenda item is 6.4, Planning Scheme Amendment C387 Hoddle Grid Heritage Permanent Controls, and I need to declare a conflict in relation to this item and will hand the chair over to you, Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. I'm looking to see in relation to this item, C387 Hoddle Grid Heritage. Any other conflicts?
Yes, I have a conflict, Lord Mayor.
Do you want to state the nature and type?
I am a member of the Victorian Bar Council. A wholly owned subsidiary of the Victorian Bar Council is the owner of an affected property and has made a submission.
Thank you, Councillor Campbell. Councillor Louis?
Lord Mayor, I too needed to declare conflict of interest due to a campaign donation in the previous term.
Thanks, Councillor Louis. Councillor Ball?
Thank you. I need to declare a material conflict of interest under the Act. My father is an owner-occupier in a building covered by the Planning Scheme Amendment under consideration this evening.
Thank you. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'll also declare a material conflict of interest under the Act. He also was a kind donor to our election campaign in 2016.
Thank you, councillors. Well, this means that we don't have a quorum this evening, so I'm going to hand over to Alison Layton, who's our acting CEO, and I meant to say that at the start, Alison, very sorry, our acting CEO this evening, to make a statement on how we're going to proceed on this matter this evening.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you for your introduction. Due to the number of councillors who have declared a conflict of interest in this matter, the required quorum for this meeting has been lost and the meeting has lapsed. A loss of quorum means this matter cannot be considered at this meeting nor at a future meeting given the number of councillors who have declared a conflict of interest. Therefore, as there is no constituted meeting, we cannot hear verbal submissions. I must say, though, that all written submissions have been reviewed and considered. So what I'll do now is ask Council's Acting General Manager of Strategy Planning and Climate Change to explain what will happen next in regards to this agenda item. Over to you, Deb.
Thank you, Alison. My name is Deb Kales and I'm the Acting General Manager, Strategy Planning and Climate Change. As a result of the loss of quorum for this item, I will be making the decision under delegation. I intend to make my decision in accordance with the management recommendation printed in the agenda papers. For transparency with our community, I will publish the details of my decision on the Planning Scheme Amendment C387 Hoddle Grid Heritage Permanent Controls page on our Participate Melbourne website. Thank you.
Thank you, Deb. Lord Mayor, the management recommendation has been endorsed. We can now invite our other councillors back to chamber.
Thank you. And Keith, if you can let councillors know that they can return from the conflict antechamber.
Complex lighting system.
Is that what's going on? Look, I'm now handing back to the Deputy Lord Mayor so that we can continue consideration of planning items this evening. Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. It is indeed a bumper evening for planning items. And the next one before us is Agenda Item 6.5, Planning Scheme Amendment C380, Zoning Corrections of Public Open Space and Anomalies in the Melbourne Planning Scheme. Would councillors like a presentation in relation to this item? I'm going to take that as a no. Then I will therefore move the motion, which is appearing on our screen. And I'm looking for a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Leppert. I'll speak very briefly to this item, noting that Oh, I'm lucky you're here, Chris Thrum, because I would like to now call on Chris Thrum, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. Thank you for your attendance, keeping us on our toes, and I welcome you to the lectern here at Town Hall Commons.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor Nicholas Rees, Lord Mayor, councillors, management team, citizens of Melbourne. This is like a technical matter. It's that Planning Scheme Amendment C380, Zoning Corrections of Public Open Space and Anomalies in the Melbourne Planning Scheme. And just recently we had the incredible anomaly of having a rezoning situation south of Flinders Street, west of Spring Street, to provide a opportunity for developers to build several Gold Coast skyscrapers at the most inappropriate location in Melbourne that I could ever imagine. I think points I'd like to raise about that is it's a total betrayal of the vision of Charles Joseph Latrobe and Robert Hoddle building outside the Hoddle Grid skyscrapers such as that. It rips apart and destroys the sight lines that football lovers have of the MCG when they're heading towards the MCG. Have any archaeologists like done a survey of the grasslands, trees, shrubs, and what's underneath the surface there? Because that's such a crucial part of Melbourne's history. I think too, it's like it's important to recognise that it's sort of like a access point for between Treasury Gardens and Burong Ma of so many like marsupials, birds. And as former Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor Aaron Woodward mentioned, like all the critters, bugs and insectoids and little creatures that are sort of the pantry of Melbourne, they travel all the way around through that sort of section. And if you put in some Gold Coast skyscrapers, it's going to block out and destroy the biodiversity of it. Travelling into the city from train, it's great to see like the sort of green infrastructure there. It's really crucial. And it's an important open space of Melbourne, and I think it should be reconsidered. The urban heat island will be increased by building in that location as well, which will affect the Royal Botanic Gardens. I think we should also consider too, it's like it will block the sight lines of Federation Square, and I think in the future we should look at like not rezoning the area in the Guillemot train yards adjacent to Federation Square, because Federation Square is an iconic building. I think it won architectural awards. It's on a heritage list now, and we shouldn't block off the view from the train lines or from Flinders Street of Federation Square. Federation Square should be a postcard view of Melbourne as well and be celebrated for that. So that's the anomaly that I'm sort of thinking about, and I think that issue should be sort of revisited again, and I thank you for your time and patience.
Thank you, Chris Thrum, for that contribution. Now, I am confident there are no other requests for the opportunity to address us this evening, so in that case I'm going to move the motion that is appearing on our screens, looking for a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Leppert. We'll speak very briefly to this one. This does indeed correct some important and serious anomalies that have been identified in our planning scheme, and it seeks to rezone Crown land
and land vested in Melbourne City Council and the Victorian Government, which is currently open space and being used as a park and recreation space, and yet does not carry the public park and recreation zone in the Melbourne planning scheme. And the amendment also rezones four residential properties from PPRZ to their appropriate zone and corrects some mapping anomalies. Indeed, as Chris Thrum has alluded, Lieutenant Governor Charles Latrobe would be turning in his grave if he knew that these green public spaces, such an important legacy for Melbourne from Latrobe's time and many other previous custodians of this city, were at risk. And so this amendment will and zoning associated zoning corrections will help fix that and ensure that these important green spaces are secured forevermore. Councillor Lippitt.
Thank you, Chair. I completely agree, and I am thrilled that we are progressing the amendment. I wish that this was the final stage of the amendment tonight, and that we were recommending to Council that Council adopt the amendment so that the Minister could make these changes to the scheme. But I fear that we're still a few months away because, of course, we do need to refer one submission to a planning panel at great cost to the taxpayer while government fights government over what should happen in Docklands. I want to thank Alex and Toby and Robin for all of their work on this matter as well. I'm really proud of what looks like a very minor fix-up amendment, but when you consider the huge amount of work that's behind here and some of the questions that get considered in this chamber from time to time, such as the previous debate, I note that the application, that the recommendation before us progresses a planning scheme amendment to rezone the Yarra to public park and recreation. Good stuff. That this is really important. We have to keep our house in order. And so to those residents in Bayswater Road in Kensington that kicked this off all those years ago saying, why is that park next to us developable? Council, what are your real intentions here? To all of those other conversations that have been unlocked by the work of our officers over the course of the life of this amendment to date, I'm thrilled that we are getting our house in order and that this process is progressing. And thank you, too, to the submitters. Thank you, Chris. You know I agree with you on Treasury Square. Whilst that's outside the scope of this amendment, there are public park and recreation rezonings in the vicinity of the area, and that overshadowing matter of the north bank of the Yarra is one that we're going to keep being in loggerheads with the state government on, I fear. And finally, Ewan Ogilvie has not presented in person tonight, but there's a very considered submission from the Carlton Residents Association on medians throughout Carlton and throughout the municipality, which are very significant local open spaces in their own right, which cannot merely be said to be traffic moderation things. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. Devices, thank you, Councillor Ball, but important local neighbourhood parks in their own right, and that there should be a recognition of those in the planning scheme. I do agree with that in principle. That is not something within the scope of this amendment, and it's not something that we need to restart this amendment on in order to incorporate those. And we also have the Sunlight Amendment, which is considering the questions of what is a park, and so this wouldn't be the time to change the way the scheme considers those medians, but it is a really important question. And so I would just want to thank Ewan for his submission and indicate that I certainly agree with it, and it is something that we should be picking up at a policy level at least when we do our citywide policy review later on this term. Those parks are something that we all value, I'm sure. Finally, on that Development Victoria matter, I do lament that we are going to panel. It's not up to me now to comment on the merits or demerits of the submission that Development Victoria has put in. That's for the panel. And so I'm not going to prejudice the position of council now to say what I think is right or wrong about that submission. I really just make the point that the City of Melbourne is a responsible and planning authority for the Melbourne planning scheme now, and it has been for many, many, many years. And at some point, Development Victoria is going to have to understand that government, whether it's the Planning Minister, the City of Melbourne and Development Victoria, we now share a role in planning the future of the city, and it is up to all of us to work together. It is not sustainable for us to leave Docklands as a black hole in terms of controls and policies in the planning scheme until Development Victoria says, Docklands is now complete. It's time for you to start rezoning some land and putting a policy framework over the top of Docklands. And so whilst I'm sure the planning panel will make recommendations back to us and we will take those recommendations on board, I didn't want to let this moment pass without expressing my disappointment that once again government is fighting government with the funds of the taxpayer over a policy matter, and we really shouldn't have been in this position.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Any other speakers for or against this motion? Then I might just very quickly exercise my right of reply and an oversight on my part before, which was to thank the team that have done excellent work on this, obviously led very capably by Emma Appleton in the City Strategy team, but in particular Alex Antoniadis, Toby Hayes and Robin Hellman, who do fantastic work for us here at the City. Thank you very much, guys. Okay, let's put this motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Declaring that carried unanimously. And I now call on the Lord Mayor to resume the role of Chair for the remainder of the meeting.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Well, we're up to agenda item 6.6, which is child safety in places of worship. Would anybody like a presentation on this item? Nope. Thank you. I'm calling on a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Ball, thank you, and a councillor to second the motion. Thanks, Councillor Hakim. Over to you, Councillor Ball.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I want to pay due credit to our predecessor, Councillor Nick Francis Gilley, for his work on this significant child safe campaign proposed in this motion and his encouraging Council to liaise with the Commissioner for Children and Young People, which will go continue to be a significant partnership in as envisaged by this motion. I want to acknowledge anyone who is here present or with us online tonight who may be a survivor and acknowledge the harm that child abuse of any kind inflicts, and that we see you and we hear you, and that is the reason for this motion tonight. This is specifically in relation to places of worship, which I'm sure we're all keenly aware. We propose in the coming financial year a child safe campaign which comprises prevention of violence against women plan and violence against women and children plan, and we'll consider how children's empowerment will be part of all that we do at Council. That is taking a child rights or human rights based approach to our work here to ensure that children have a voice in all matters that concern them, in paired with the best interests of the child principle, is that their voice must be heard in all matters affecting them. So I'm pleased that this is a rights-based approach, that this is an effort to do everything we can in addition to other levels of government and other authorities in this space.
and I commend it to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Ball. I'll be seconding this motion. I do want to acknowledge the motion from the last councillor as well and thank the previous council for putting this very important motion forward. I have been reflecting with this on the images we've been seeing over the last couple of days of children dying in war zones and the atrocities that happen against children around the world. What we can do here today as a local government is drive change at home and in our local municipality, and importantly to support those who are otherwise unable to take control of their lives. I think trauma for those affected, but trauma that happens out of child abuse, the intergenerational trauma that it causes, something that we all have to live with as a community. And it's a critical point that we take responsibility as a community, as a government, as statutory authorities, as organisations for the safety of all children. So I'm proud of the work that we are doing in our capacity as a council, and thank the officers for the work in taking this motion forward from the previous council. Safety ultimately is an essential driver to good health, to good outcomes in our economy, in our community, in education, in everything we drive and everything we do. So let's be clear to everyone who works, lives, and goes through our city. Firstly, we can't do this in isolation, so we have to do this together as a community. But we are making it clear today as City of Melbourne, as a council, as a municipality, we're making it clear to everyone in our municipality that we have zero tolerance to child abuse at the City of Melbourne. And to all of those who have suffered, I echo Councillor Ball's words, you know, we see you, we hear you, and importantly, we believe you. And we will do everything we can to ensure in our powers to make this a safe city for children and a safe city for all. I put the motion to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Hakim. Are there any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Cheng.
Thank you, Councillor Ball and Councillor Hakim, for the motion. I wholeheartedly support this. I believe every child around the world has the right to feel safe, and hopefully the awareness campaign that this motion will bring will show the community that we do have a zero-tolerance approach. And thank you for the words that you both said. It resonates a lot with a lot of people around the world, and I think, you know, this is an excellent motion to show the community. Like you said, we do hear you, and we hopefully can do something about it. So I support this 100%.
Councillor Griffiths.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. And again, thank you to the mover and seconder and Councillor Chang for acknowledging the many people who have been victims in the past. And that's absolutely where this motion should start, and to thank again the previous council and councillors for their consideration of this matter and the work that the officers have done to bring it to this point, which is just one step along a long, long journey, as well as the restating of the fact that there should be zero tolerance for child abuse, and of the importance of children's rights to be safe. I particularly wanted to emphasise the positive aspects that are contained in this motion, and for them to be something that we consider not just in relation to the Child Safe City campaign, but into all of the major considerations that we
undertake as councillors. I know that's something that we've spoken about as we've mulled over the council plan and some of those other big ticket items of ensuring that the voices of everyone who is a resident or a visitor to the city is considered, and that children are part of that. So it's fantastic to see direct reference to the importance of children being empowered, seen, heard and celebrated. And as a nine-year-old, as a father of a nine-year-old, not 9 years old myself anymore, but as a father of a nine-year-old, I have no trouble seeing and hearing the importance of the city to my child. That was recently re-emphasised with thanks to the Lord Mayor, who encouraged Blake to come up on Friday night to assist her in turning on the lights at Federation Square for Buddha Day. And he's been reminding me since then that I was sitting down the back while he was invited down the front. So we have a very much seen, heard and celebrated nine-year-old on that front. But I think that's a really important example of the kind of way that we can be encouraging more young people to take a life and a role in the civic life that we have here. We've got a number of plans in place as we emerge from COVID and emerge from the lockdown, and we've discussed those at length and we'll discuss them a bit more in a moment. But I think it's really important that when we consider what the nighttime economy might be, when we consider all of those aspects of what it is that we're trying to foster in our city, that we don't forget the role of children and young people as residents and as visitors to the city, and that their voices get heard in those processes. So I look forward to that happening more broadly and specifically in terms of the Child Safe City campaign.
Thanks, Councillor Griffiths. Any other Councillor Lippitt?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Just very quickly, I don't want to repeat anything that's been said. I obviously agree with everything that's been said and wholeheartedly support the recommendation before us. I'm really glad that we are engaging in this external campaign and that we've budgeted for it and that we're putting our money where our mouths are and that we're serious about it. But I just didn't want to let the moment pass without also acknowledging that above and beyond the external campaign that we're now doing, our officers each and every day work with children across the municipality. They've embraced the principles of the reportable conduct scheme and know how it works at a local level. And whether it's through our childcare function or our incredible maternal child and health nurses and services that we offer, or our community centres, or so on, the work that our staff do with children every day is absolutely extraordinary, and the reason we're able to embark on these external campaigns with such maturity and nous is due to the expertise and the experience of some incredibly talented people on staff. So to everyone in your team, Ali Duncan, thank you very, very much.
Other speakers to the motion? I'm just going to add my thanks to the instigators and the supporters and the implementers of this motion and the program of work that it represents. It is leadership and it is courage, and it's a great reflection of Councillor Nicholas Francis Gilley. Oh, hang on, not a councillor anymore. Of Nicholas Francis Gilley and his time as councillor. His passion, his belief and his dedication to this issue is reflected in this motion tonight, and one that I will be supporting, and I'm grateful for all the reasons already stated. So I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous. So we declare that motion carried. Thank you, everyone. This brings us to agenda item 6.7, which is the Economic Development Strategy, Draft Strategy. Councillors, would anybody like a presentation on this item? No, thank you. Then I am going to move this motion, and I'm looking for a councillor to second the motion. Thank you, Councillor Campbell. Well, before COVID-19, and this is something we've said often now, but I'm going to keep saying it, before COVID-19, the city of Melbourne was the engine room of the Victorian economy, and we just tipped over a record $104 billion gross local product. Almost 1 million people a day were pulsing through our city streets and enlivening our city centre. Our pre-COVID challenge was all about how to harness that growth and manage it successfully. And now, as a result of the pandemic, we find ourselves needing to turn all of our attention and efforts to stimulating and creating growth, finding levers to drive economic growth in our city centre. This is an issue that has local, state, and national significance, given the contribution that our municipality makes to our country. I want to thank Katrina McKenzie and Andrew Weir and the team who have gone through an extensive process, months now, of work on this strategy. And that's not surprising given the significant change that we've experienced, but also the unpredictability and uncertainty that we still find ourselves in as a result of a once-in-a-lifetime event impacting our city. It's also a reflection of the significant consultation that's been undertaken to date with industry stakeholders, with economic experts, and also, I'm really pleased to say, with community, and we were able to really take the value of so many of the conversations had through the deliberative engagement process instigated for our council plan and take a lot of that feedback into this plan. And I think the way that the plans, council plan and the economic development strategy, have been working in parallel has been really helpful. To be able to see the ambitions of our community and the work of experts both externally and internally come together into this document is fantastic. And our draft economic development strategy proposes to build upon Melbourne's economic strengths, those that have been there for generations, aspects of our economy, they're our strong foundations, and provide coordinated and consistent support to those key sectors such as education, such as professional services, such as tourism, and look to see, not to see, but look to activate in a very constructive ways for those sectors to be able to bounce back swiftly and strongly. This 10-year strategy will not only guide the City of Melbourne in responding to immediate economic challenges, it provides that foundation for how we will seize opportunities and meet challenges in the future, and particularly with the focus on the next decade. And it does then incorporate what we can see as new opportunities for driving economic growth, but importantly, new industries and new jobs to really give that sense of hope and positivity and confidence that people can live here and work here and realise their full potential here in the City of Melbourne. Our objectives are, as a result of this or reflected in this draft strategy, are to be the easiest place to establish and grow a business, to be the best place to live, especially if you have a job in our municipality, and a dynamic market for those new industries and investments such as unleashing climate capital and also driving technology innovation. There are 8 key priorities that reflect those objectives and that will enhance our economy in the short, medium and longer term. And as I said, I feel really confident that this document has been developed together with, in partnership with key stakeholder groups, industry, our business community, government, and key stakeholders. So I am excited tonight to be endorsing this draft strategy, which reflects the hard work of so many people in this organisation. So thank you. I'm inviting our community to reflect back on what they've told us as well, have a look at how it's represented in the document, and provide us with further feedback as part of this really important conversation as we look to revitalise the economy of Melbourne and create the economy of the future. For those reasons, I'm happy to propose this motion to you, Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. And Lord Mayor, as you have so correctly identified, prior to the pandemic, Melbourne was the engine room of the Victorian economy. And critically, Melbourne was disproportionately impacted by COVID, and in particular, the extensive lockdowns experienced last year. Although much of the rest of Victoria has recovered and has experienced economic growth since then, we know that the city is still going through a period of recovery. Modelling by PwC projected that the economy as a result of the pandemic would lose 79,000 jobs and up to $110 billion in output. And this strategy aims to turn that around. We know that there is a lot of hard work to be done across a number of industries and that it cannot all be done by the City of Melbourne. And that's why this strategy acknowledges where we will deliver, where we will partner and where we will advocate. Because we know that it is critical that Melbourne not only recovers from COVID, but comes back stronger than ever and uses this time and the opportunities it presents to build a thriving economy for the future. As you've identified, Lord Mayor, this strategy puts forward 8 key priorities for the way that we will drive economic recovery and create conditions for a future thriving economy. But the one that I am particularly proud of and excited is making Melbourne into a business-friendly city. We want to ensure Melbourne is one of the easiest places to start and to grow a business. That means creating the conditions that allows business to flourish, and it also means knowing when to step out of the way and allow business to get on with the job of doing what it knows best. And as part of that, we know that there are things we can do to facilitate that. We can streamline our processes. We can digitise processes so that people in business spend less time on working through red tape and more time on growing their businesses. I'm also excited about the creation of Invest Melbourne, which will encourage investment in this city, including global headquarters and attracting research and development to the City of Melbourne. Invest Melbourne will assist in that process and make Melbourne an attractive place to do that by streamlining planning and permitting processes. And we think the opportunities could be astounding. There is no reason for business across the region to go to Sydney or Singapore. Melbourne can be the place to start your business from the startup level to grow as a thriving headquarters for our multinationals. We want to make it a place of opportunity, a place for startups. We know there are fantastic opportunities in our city in terms of vacant shop fronts. We want to make the city a place where business wants to begin its journey, but also a place where it reaches its success. We want to partner with business to do that and create the conditions for it to thrive. I'm incredibly proud of the work of our team to put this together. I want to thank Andrew Weir and Katrina for putting together such a carefully thought through policy under incredibly difficult conditions. No one imagined we'd be coming up with an economic development strategy following a pandemic. But I'm really proud of this output, and that's why I'm proud to second this motion.
Thanks, Councillor Campbell. Are there any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Griffiths.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'd like to very sincerely add my thanks to the council officers who've made this document possible. Very much acknowledge the comprehensive nature of the document. It feels like every single sentence in there is jammed with two or three ideas, and I know that hasn't come about except through a lot of drafting and a lot of work and a lot of consultation. So start with a big thank you on that front. Acknowledge the size of the task that we're trying to take on as we're reinvigorating a whole range of sectors in the economy rather than what might happen at other times in history where there's really just a need to address one sector at a time. Within the document, the electronic version that we have, I note on page 13 that there's a very clear acknowledgement, which I think people in the hospitality and retail and international education sectors will be glad to see that there's an acknowledgement in there, particularly of the difficulties that they've had and that we as a council recognise those. We've obviously seen some regrowth in some parts of the city around retail and hospitality, and that again has been due to an enormous amount of good work from people from council, and acknowledge as well again that there's another contribution from the state government that the city will match, which will bring another $200 million worth of investment, which will hopefully go even further in addressing those. Once again, thank the Lord Mayor and everyone who's been involved in the advocacy that's made that happen. Having acknowledged all of those things, the one I guess that's still a little bit left out in terms of the three that were impacted hardest is the international education sector, an area that I've spoken about and that I know a number of other councillors have spoken about on numerous occasions. And while we're doing all we can here at council to make that sector regrow, we really do need the assistance of the other levels of government. I won't go through all of the arguments and discussion points that we've had on that matter over the many months that we've been discussing it so far, but I really just wanted to acknowledge and assure the people who are working in that sector, the people who rely on international students either as customers or as workers, and most particularly to international students, whether they're the ones who have stayed in Melbourne throughout the COVID situation or whether they're the ones who are waiting overseas to return to their studies, that we haven't forgotten about you and that we'll continue to advocate for you, and that that's very much contained in this document.
Thanks, Councillor Griffiths. Any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Hickim.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. And I'd just like to start by acknowledging thanks to Lord Mayor and Councillor Campbell for moving the motion and for your work on this draft strategy. I'd also like to thank Trina and Andrew for all your work on this strategy. It's been definitely a lot of work that's happened around this draft strategy. It's been debated and discussed heavily across council, and this is the product of a lot of deliberation, and it's fantastic to see this work. So well done. I know you have spent countless hours and toil on it. Safe to say we are at a time of great opportunity. The pandemic has been something that was unforeseen. It has caused a shock to our systems, but it has also made us realize the gaps within what we had. And I think this economic strategy in its draft form does work towards so many of those. It recognises the intersection of our community and economics, our environment in a post-pandemic economy. I'm so excited about a few things, and I won't go into too much. There's been so much discussed, and I echo all the words that have been discussed so far. But I want to share a few things. I think quite excited about how what we're talking about here as the draft, with the draft strategy, that we are supporting as a city economy, not only that thrives, not just grows, in effect. And we are looking at Melbourne beyond what we've had in the past, so beyond the office and as a destination. So Visit Melbourne will play a key part here and is one of the initiatives, along with others like Invest Melbourne, that Councillor Campbell also shared. It is really important with these initiatives around how we create an economy and an environment and a community that thrives here in the city of Melbourne. We also are recognizing the role of creatives, startups, and how we unlock that climate capital that we have. We've seen over recent times the US and China and huge global movement towards unlocking climate capital. We're seeing organizations and businesses unlocking that in their own ways. And we as a city need to move to ensure that Australia is not left behind, and to point that we are a place where we want investment from businesses, and we welcome investment from businesses in that scope. Really one small initiative, but I think is really important and one that I've spoken with business owners a lot about, and I think is a great outcome as part of the strategy, is the business concierge. We've seen how the business concierge has worked through the pandemic in supporting businesses, but the expansion of that to take business support to businesses and making it easy for businesses to access and be able to do what they do best, as Councillor Campbell mentioned, their business, and spend less time on administration, but actually be able to circumnavigate or navigate, sorry, at the myriad of regulation and things that they need to with council and others is really, really important. I mean, I think we even sometimes get lost in the rules and the processes, and it's really important to have that guidance, and I think the business concierge will do that. So a fantastic initiative there. So ultimately, I just want to say it's time to rethink how our economics, now how economy intersects with our lives, and you ultimately can't have one without the other. We saw that. And I think this draft strategy works towards that. So I will be supporting the motion. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Hakim. Anybody else wanting to speak to the motion? Then I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thank you, everyone. We're on to agenda item 6.8, Exhibition Street Stage 2 Bike Lane and Streetscape Upgrade. I believe we'd like an extensive presentation on this item. No, we don't. Anybody? No. I'm looking for somebody to move this motion. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. I'm going to second the motion. Over to you, Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you to Roger and everyone involved in bringing this recommendation to us. This project is obviously many, many, many years in the making, but this stage of the project is very exciting. This isn't just a project to make the streets safer for cyclists and pedestrians, although it will undoubtedly do that. This is actually also a project that is going to make the theatres district and a whole lot of shop fronts on Exhibition Street a remarkably different space. I think it is extraordinary to ever have a project that has the word bicycle in it to come back with a list of stakeholders, and for all of that work to come back showing just how much support there is for a project. This is no small feat. And I really congratulate the work that the officers have done. It's quite extraordinary. On that theatres precinct in particular, it's one of the four blocks that are being considered here today. If you consider what's there at the moment and consider what's going to be there in the future, what the city's doing here on Exhibition Street is something quite remarkable. The expansion of the footpaths, the planting of trees that are going to turn that part of Exhibition Street into the most beautiful boulevard, and of course the making of the streets that will be safer for cyclists and all road users, is going to make what's currently a difficult place to get in and out of at showtime a place for people to linger, a place for people to enjoy, and the benefits for neighbouring businesses, hospitality businesses in particular, I think is going to be quite extraordinary. So this project isn't a project that's come from one work area. This is a project that's implementing our urban forest strategy. It's a project that's considering the local retail economy. It's a project that's considering the future of live theatre in the city, and it is a project I think that's been coordinated across council in a really, really intelligent way. So I'm delighted to be supporting it, as well as, of course, knowing that this is a project that will connect a major commuter route for cyclists all the way down Canning Street and Rathdown Street through to the south of the city, across the river as well, and the reduction in near misses, in injuries, and hopefully never any more fatalities is something that's going to
make this street a wonderful place to be for all road users, no matter the mode. And so I'm really excited about the project, and the design looks fantastic. Let's do it.
Thanks, Councillor Lippitt. And I agree. I'm really pleased to be supporting this motion this evening by seconding. Again, thanks to our infrastructure team for their work in progressing these concept plans and for the proposed community engagement approach. This exhibition street, as Councillor Lippitt noted, is a key bike route connecting Melbourne's northern suburbs to the central city, to the river trails, to the south, and this second stage of bicycle lanes will complete a missing link south to north, north to south. Importantly, as a bicycle rider myself, I note that the research in 2018 showed that protected bicycle lanes, that when we provide protected bicycle lanes, 83% of people who live within 10 kilometres of the CBD and own a bike will actually consider cycling for transport vis-a-vis other modes of transport, and that's compared to only 22% who feel confident to ride on the painted bicycle lanes. And then, again, safety is a major issue for encouraging more women into active transport such as cycling. And I know I feel much safer. I can throw my legs in the air and my hands up in the air in protected bicycle lanes, which I would not do in bicycle lanes. That's a very bad image, I know. Thank you also for the improvements to the public realm. East End, our east end of the city, like the West End in London, is our primary theatre district, and just that sense of people spilling out onto the streets and enjoying their experience even more is something I'm looking forward to. In finalising these designs, we are asking management to strike a balance between adequate cycling infrastructure and the interaction and space allowable for other road users, and that we get a good level of short-term parking for local businesses, car shares and taxis. It has been part of the feedback, and I thank the team for looking at changes to create more drop-off areas, in this case, in that part of Exhibition Street closer to the Collins Street intersection. That's important that we continue to strike that balance in the city, particularly as we see more people moving to share cars, which ultimately is a good thing as well. So I'm really pleased to be supporting this motion this evening. Are there any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Hakim.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I just quickly want to say I am so excited about this transformation along the theatre precinct. It's a beautiful area for all of us to enjoy, and this will make going to the theatre even more enjoyable. I'm also really glad to see the recognition of universal access, and wanted to thank Councillor Campbell for raising those points last week and their inclusion. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Other speakers? Then I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands like you're on a bicycle. That's unanimous, so we declare the motion carried. Thank you so much. Well, look, this concludes reports from management to be considered in open session in our new space this evening. There are no items of general business for consideration. Are there any items of urgent business, councillors? None. Thank you very much. Now, we do allow for public questions at the end of the meeting. There were no registered questions for this part of the meeting. I believe there is no one left who would like to ask a question. Member of our team? No. Then that leaves it for me to say thank you so much to members of the public and to our management team. Thanks for attending this evening. Thanks, councillors, for your work. And I'm declaring the meeting closed at 8:31 p.m. Thanks.